This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Darren Copeland. Secretary of State Colin Powell was asked if he had any comment on the new tape being aired that shows Osama bin Laden.
I have not seen the tape that apparently you've just heard about, but I've been in meetings. I haven't heard it yet.
Previously unseen footage of al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden has been aired on Arabic television network Al Jazeera. Ayman al-Zawahiri, another leader of al-Qaeda, is seen walking with bin Laden in an unknown mountainous area. It's not clear exactly when the tape was produced. A voice believed to be al-Zawahiri promised more attacks would take place against the U.S. Hamas has sworn revenge for a strike against one of its leaders. Senior Hamas leader Mahmoud al-Zahar said from his hospital bed that the group would avenge the killings of its leaders in Gaza and the West Bank.
These crimes are escalating the process of resistance, and we are sure that they are not going to achieve their goal. Sooner or later, we are going to achieve our liberation for our land.
An Israeli warplane fired a missile at the home of a Hamas leader today, wounding both he and his wife. The Hamas official's son and bodyguard were killed in the attack. The military wing of Hamas said the Israeli attack crossed the line and that they would start targeting Jewish houses and buildings in response. Amid the violence, Ahmed Karaa formally accepted his nomination to the post of Palestinian prime minister today. He called on both sides to take actions to end the current cycle of violence.
Smokers, now you can break the nicotine habit safely, effectively, and naturally within 7 days, guaranteed. And now you can quit smoking for good without craving, side effects, irritability, or weight gain with an amazing new product called Smoke Free. Smoke Free consists of three herbal supplements that work together to completely and naturally eliminate your body's cravings for nicotine. Smoke Free replenishes vital nutrients as it counteracts the effects of nicotine without the use of dangerous drugs or patches. Your mood, nervousness, and sleep will improve as your dependence on nicotine is eliminated. In fact, the ingredients in Smoke Free is so effective, it's listed as an all-natural homeopathic medicine, and surveys boast an amazing 92% success rate. So if you've ever thought about or tried to quit smoking in the past, now you can be smoke-free in 7 days, guaranteed. Call now to try Smoke Free completely risk-free. It's safe, effective, and guaranteed to work. You have nothing to lose but your life. So call toll-free, 1-800-485-0648. That's 1-800-485-0648.
Teachers and school leaders are back at the negotiating table today in Marysville, Washington, for the first time since union members went on strike. Teachers overwhelmingly voted to walk off the job last Tuesday, turning down the district's latest contract offer. Union members are demanding better wages, smaller classroom sizes, and better health benefits. The walkout is affecting more than 11,000 students who are now on extended summer vacations. More than 7,000 students in Lake Stevens are also on extended summer vacation due to a teacher's strike there. Students had been back to school for 3 days when union members voted to walk off the job. Union leaders and district representatives are expected to meet on Friday. Wages, health benefits, and smaller classroom sizes are the main sticking points in this dispute. The district says it's considering filing an unfair labor practice complaint against the union. School leaders claim teachers are not bargaining in good faith.
Mom, Dad,
someone's going to try and get me to take drugs.
Want to do something about it?
You're going to have to make me tell you where I am and who I'm with every day.
Don't like the sound of that?
So, you got to be the grown-up.
Kids with involved parents are less likely to try drugs. So ask them, who, what, where, when? Questions. They're the anti-drug.
Call 1-800-729-6686 for more information. Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Students at Stuyvesant High School near Ground Zero reminisce about life in the shadow of the Twin Towers, but say few things have changed. Steve Sandberg reports.
2 years ago, the lights at Stuyvesant High School went out. Smoke filled the halls, and students were forced to escape, led by teachers through gray, soot-covered streets. Senior Suhan Im says he remembers the World Trade Center collapse like it was yesterday.
We had to evacuate, and we had to walk along the Hudson River, and it was just crazy.
Students admit they miss looking up and seeing the Twin Towers, but that there's little left. Effect.
That's pretty much back to normal. Things are just how they were before.
We do remember it, but, you know, you got to move on.
Steve Sandberg, New York.
A videotape showing al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden sent stocks lower today. The Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 87 points to close the session at 94.20. The tech-heavy NASDAQ dropped 50 points to wind up at 18.24. The S&P 500 slid 2 to close at 10.11. I'm Darren Copeland, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Yesterday, in Brakes 101, master cylinders, calipers, and pads were demystified. You learned they are a lot like hearts, muscles, and skin, all designed to stop cars and save lives. When I come back, it's Brakes 102. Hi, I'm Bobby Likas. Every summer, callers on the Car Clinic Network ask what's causing that odor when I turn on my air conditioner. And the answer? Bacterial growth in the AC system. The good news is there's an ingenious process from BG Products that cleans and disinfects your entire ventilation system without having to dismantle it. You'll breathe easier with a BG ventilation service, and your car will smell like new. To find a shop that performs this service, go to bgfindashop.com. That's bgfindashop.com. Welcome to Brakes 102 at Car Clinic College. Today's lesson, analog braking systems, or ABS. Ever press the brake and nothing? You just pumped and hoped for the best? Hope no more. The best is here. Computer-controlled ABS. This system monitors the speed of individual wheels and applies precise braking power to each. And if any brake starts to lock or slows at a different rate than the others, that specific brake is automatically pumped or pulsed to prevent lockup. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
When you're swallowing all life's lies,
right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
With special guest host Curtis Ellis.
Yay, gang.
That would be me, Curtis Ellis. I am your special guest host tonight. And I am so happy to be here, right here in New York City, on the 10th of September, one day before that big anniversary day, September 11th. I'll be here tomorrow night as well, and wow, do I have a special show lined up for you tonight and tomorrow night, gang. We're gonna cover the uncovered and uncover the covered up right here on Mike Malloy's old show here on the IE America Radio Network. So if you want to get in, you better get in now, because you won't be able to get in with a crowbar later on. The phone number is 1-800-825-5937, or you can email me at FastTalkRadio@Yahoo.com. FastTalkRadio@Yahoo.com. That's with two T's, FastTalk radio@Yahoo.com. Now, you see, we have truth in advertising here on IE America Radio. I tell you right off, this is a bunch of fast talk. Unlike the White House, which tries to tell you that everything they say is true. But, gang, we know better here. We know that you can't trust the government. And you can't trust politicians. They might be honest people, but once they get in office, man, they just start lying like a rug. I was talking to some conservative the other day. They had this woman, Martha Zoller. She has a show down in Atlanta or Gainesville or someplace down there in Dixieland. She had me on her show because she likes to debate leftists. And she was saying, well, Curtis, the thing is, you just don't trust government. Well, yeah, that's right. I don't trust government. I thought conservatives weren't supposed to trust the government. I thought we trust the people. We don't trust the government. The government is a bunch of lying, cheating bureaucrats, right? Isn't that what the conservatives are supposed to believe? But it's all turned around now. So we're all confused in America because we're constantly told different things. That's what I'm convinced of more and more. People are walking around a fog because the story changes every 15 minutes. You know, we're going into Iraq because they got weapons, and then we're going into Iraq because they don't have weapons, but they got tyranny. And then we went into Iraq because we wanted to get the terrorists over there before they got us here. So we're just using a form of human flypaper to attract terrorists over there in Iraq. And so they just switch their stories all the time, and nobody knows what the heck's going on. So we're totally confused, aren't we? Call me and let me know if you're totally confused. 800-825-5937. Whatever you want to talk about, I'll talk about. But I'll tell you what we got coming up later on this big show, the really big show tonight. Going to be talking with Monica Gabriel at the bottom of the hour here. I met Monica a couple weeks ago. I was working for the Associated Press, and I had to go find some families of people who died on September 11th who were murdered in the World Trade Center because the Port Authority, which is the quasi-government institution, I love that. Here in New York, we got quasi-government institutions. It combines the worst of both worlds. You have the sovereign immunity and all of the power of condemnation, all the power of the state with a quasi-government institution. You got the power of the government plus the profit motive of the private sector. So, anyway, the Port Authority owned the World Trade Center. They own the bridge, a lot of the bridges and tunnels, and they own the airports around here in New York. And what happened is the transcripts for the Port Authority Police Department, all the emergency calls, were released. The transcripts of the emergency calls on September 11th were released. So I was supposed to go find some of the family victims and find out what these people thought about the release of the transcripts of their loved ones calling in to some operator who was going to say, hey, just sit in your desk, don't worry, don't do anything, everything's okay. Meanwhile, they all died because they followed the advice. And so I was supposed to find some family victims, find out what they thought. Well, I found Monica. Monica Gabriel is one of the people I spoke with, and she's very, very outspoken. She's very tough lady. You're going to like her, and that's why I booked her on, because I did it just for you folks, because I knew you'd like her. But it was very interesting talking to her. She introduced me to some other people. And as a matter of fact, I caught up with her in the green room, the waiting room at Fox TV. She was going on the Fox News channel, and she said, why don't you just meet me in front of Fox? I said, great, I'll meet you in front of Fox. I met her in front of Fox, did my interview for the radio, and she said, well, you know, some of the other families are coming in, and why don't you come into Fox with me, and we'll just hang out in the green room, and I'll introduce you to everybody. I said, this is great. This is one-stop shopping. I get to meet all the family victims in one place. My work day is done in 3 hours. I love you, Monica. So I go into Fox TV, and we're sitting there in the green room, and Sean Hannity comes in, and I talk to him for a bit, and some Mike Jarrick, and he comes by, and some other people there that work at Fox. And meanwhile, they've got the monitor, or the TV going, and it's broadcasting the news of the day on the Fox News channel. Sound is turned down. And it's all the pictures coming from Jackson, Mississippi, where all those people are praying. They're ferociously praying around the graven image of the Ten Commandments. There they are, ferociously praying to God. Do not, and or to whoever they think is God. You know, somebody's masquerading as God, is my belief that their prayers are actually ending up someplace else. They think they're praying to God, but actually, intention being nine-tenths of the law, their prayers are going somewhere else. So there they are praying to this graven image, saying, do not remove this. And there's thousands or hundreds of these people crowded around this courthouse in Jackson where this 10-ton statue of the tablets are. And Monica looks up at the monitor, and she shakes her head, and she says, somebody ought to drop a bomb there. So much for the sensitive show that they say I'm going to do tonight. I thought Monica has really got things in perspective. I see, having lost a loved one in a bombing incident, she really has sympathy for the whole human race now. So you'll like Monica. So if you want to get in to talk to her, you better get lined up now because the line's going around the corner, folks. So it got me thinking, though, talking to all of these family victims and the ones I caught up with. I caught up with Monica Gabriel, caught up with Kristen Breitweiser, and caught up with Cliff Russell. And they all, to a person, they all were supportive of the transcripts of September 11th being released for the simple reason that we need more information. The people need the information. We need the truth as to what happened. And I don't know why this seems like such a surprising, controversial viewpoint, but it does seem that way. It seems like, gee, that's odd. You would think they would want to get beyond this. They would want closure, and they wouldn't want to be reminded of that, the sorrow and the pain that they went through of losing their loved ones on that day. Well, and as a matter of fact, when I spoke with people, spoke with civilians on the street in the days after my interviews with these people, people asked me, well, what did they think? What did these family victims think? Did they? Because the impression I got from the people I saw in the media was that the families really didn't want these transcripts out there. They felt violated or somehow hurt, emotionally turmoiled by having this stuff dredged up again. And it occurred to me that what a stupid, baseless point of view. Now, I can appreciate that somebody, and as the people I spoke with said, I can appreciate someone not wanting to hear this, not wanting to be reminded. Well, then don't read the paper that day. Don't turn on the TV that day. And, turn on the music station instead of the news station. But the thing that really struck me is for the way that type of psychobabble that, it's too traumatic and too traumatizing for people to hear this, so we shouldn't be releasing this information, or we shouldn't be airing it. It's too sensitive. The wounds are still too sore. For news media, for journalists, for people whose business, whose profession, whose duty it is to communicate information, to peddle that line of psychobabble, of pop psychology drivel, is absolutely ludicrous. And that's just one example. I mean, we hear it all the time. When Timothy McVeigh was executed, almost to a person, the news media commentators, in the liberal media, even on CNN, the pitch and the angle always was the families need closure. Now, I believe that there is no psychological evidence that killing the killer, assuming for a moment that Tim McVeigh was the killer, that killing the killer gives you closure, gives the family victims, the families of the victim, any kind of closure or psychological balm. There's no psychological evidence that that is true, number one. Number two, most of the great religions of this earth, and particularly the one that we have in this country as the majority religion, the Christian religion, does not teach vengeance. And there's a reason that these religions don't teach vengeance as a bedrock principle, because vengeance is a shallow emotion. It's a shallow psychological mechanism. It does not lead to higher things. So, and then thirdly, and this is perhaps actually the most important, by killing Mr. McVeigh, we'll never know the rest of the story that he might be able to tell. Because there's plenty of evidence that him and old McNichols didn't do that bombing mission in Oklahoma City all by their lonesome. And maybe someday, 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now, he might tell us something. You never know. By killing him, we've cut off that information. And information is supposed to be what journalists and news media people deal in. And so to cut off information seems to me like shooting your foot if you're a journalist. And to argue that we shouldn't release transcripts, we don't need to do that, it's just too traumatic, and it's really hurting people, that's going against the very principles of a communicator. So it just baffles me what passes for journalism in this country, and it baffles me the kind of psychobabble that we just accept, that is just so surrounding us that it's become ubiquitous and invisible. I'd like to hear what you have to think. My name is Curtis Ellis. The phone number here is 1-800-825-5937.
Hey, Mom, here's some good news. Tax rebate checks are here just in time for back-to-school shopping. And Sears will cash your tax rebate check free of charge with any purchase. Here's some more good news. Right now, during the Sears Great 3-Day Sale, save 50% on great back-to-school items throughout the store. Plus, all jeans are on sale. Brands like Levi's, Lee, Canyon River Blues, LEI, Bongo, and Mud. So hurry in now through Saturday. You don't want to miss the Great 3-Day Sale. 3-day sale ends August 16th. All jeans on sale through August 30th. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Sears. Good life. Great price.
Hi, Tom Baudet for Motel6.com. Next time you're goofing around on the internet, you know, in other words, the next time you're at work, click on over to Motel6.com for Click 6 Web Bargains. Those are special discounts at hundreds of locations that you can only get when you book online. Just look for the Click 6 icon at Motel6.com. And then get back to work. I'm Tom Baudet, and we'll leave the light and the modem on for you. Anacor Hotel.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Show.
Gizmo's back on the line in Tucson, Arizona.
First off, I'd like to tell you I'm on Sirius Radio 145 Left and say hi to my other trucker buddies out there that listen to you, Kodiak and James. And
great.
I pulled this 18-wheel car over to the side of the road to speak with him. I've read a couple articles that suggested that Bush Sr., had he gotten a second term, would have followed pretty much the same lines to go to war with Iraq. I'm wondering if there wasn't some kind of conspiracy all the way back to the 2000 election to get Junior in so he could go ahead and fulfill the plans designed for their father in his second term. I enjoy your program. You're very informative, and I've learned a lot from listening to you, and I appreciate your program, Tom, so keep it up.
Well, thank you, Gizmo. That's very kind of you, and thanks for pulling the 18-wheeler off to the side. I didn't realize you were driving a truck. That's remarkable.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
The Mike Malloy Show with special guest host Curtis Ellis.
Hey, gang, and the phone number here is 1-800-825-5937. You can also drop me an email at fasttalkradio@yahoo.com. fasttalkradio@yahoo.com. Now, Patrick from Kentucky has dialed 800-825-5937. Patrick, thanks for joining me. How are you tonight?
Oh, doing all right. Hi, Curtis. How you doing?
Oh, very good, very good.
I was watching the 9/11 series on PBS. It's a must see. It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Very moving. You were mentioning that earlier.
Yeah.
And they go throughout the whole history of it from the very beginning, from all the way back to 1968 when they built it, and it's pretty disturbing.
Yeah. Well, as a matter of fact, what Monica Gabriel, my guest, who's going to be joining me after the bottom of the hour here, she's started a group called the Skyscraper Safety Campaign, because those buildings were not built according to code.
Right.
The Port Authority, which owned those buildings, did not have to adhere to the building codes of New York. So they were built rather flimsily and shabbily. It's very interesting. They were built cheaply, and as a result, they collapsed.
Yeah, they keep showing replay after replay after replay of trying to tell us how the core, it wasn't the core that collapsed first, and you know, it's as if, well, we're just going to have to build a bigger and better building, you know, you know, someday, you know, and it's like,
right.
Come on, you know.
I don't know if anybody'd go in one of those buildings if they rebuilt it. You know, some people are saying, oh, I want them to rebuild those towers the way they were. Well, I tell you, I don't know a lot of people that would take a job and go in them if they did.
Yeah. So did you see the protester in the Rumsfeld speech today?
Oh, no, I missed that. Tell me.
Oh, well, it was on CNN, and they showed the whole thing. And she said, Rumsfeld, you're fired. And she went on and on and on, and it was great. And,
well, you know, this yeah, go ahead.
And someone in the Rumsfeld audience said, shut up, you know, and that just shows the arrogance of the Bush crime family. But
well, they believe in personal responsibility for everyone except themselves. No one's to blame for anything. The CIA did a great job. Rumsfeld did a fantastic job. I saw a little bit of Wolfowitz yesterday testifying before Congress. So how did we get in this situation? Oh, the planning was great. We had great planning. I love Condi Rice. I saw Condoleezza Rice. She was on the talk shows this Sunday, and they were asking her, well, you know, didn't you know that there was no electricity in Iraq? Didn't you know that the infrastructure was so bad you need $90 billion to fix this up? Well, no, we didn't know. I mean, we had no way of knowing. That's a very closed society over there. We had no idea that you get outside of Baghdad and it's like the Flintstones.
Yeah.
It's a very closed society like Russia. Well, excuse me, Soviet Russia didn't have UN inspectors crawling all over it. So.
Yeah. Well, I sat through the debate last night, but when it got through the Fox analyst, I had to turn it off. I just couldn't stand it. But
I wonder if their ratings suffered. I wonder if Fox's ratings suffered having Democrats on the air for a change.
Oh, I don't know. I think it actually went up, but as soon as the analyst went on, it went back to the same. But I think Thursday night's debate. I don't know about last night, but I think Thursday night's debate. I think Kucinich really won. I think he did great in Albuquerque.
Yeah, Kucinich really just lays it on the line. He tells it like it is.
Yeah. Last night was just they had like three different interviewers, and nobody asked Congressman Kucinich any questions except for one lady.
Huh.
And they did everything they could to dodge him.
Yeah, he's too much trouble, baby. He's too much trouble. Well, thanks so much for your call, Patrick. Keep listening. We're going to have a very interesting interview segment coming up with Monica Gabriel. My name's Curtis Ellis. The phone number here is 800-825-5937. We're going to hear from one of the families of somebody who was murdered on September 11th and what she thinks about this administration and this whole government of ours.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show, 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time, Monday through Friday on IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Hamilton.
And I'm Laura Miller.
The promise of the American dream turned into a nightmare for immigrant workers employed by the John Pickle Company of Tulsa. That's what 52 Indian immigrants argued as their case against the Oklahoma manufacturer opened this week in a federal court. The welders, fitters, and electricians say they were recruited to come to the U.S. through promises of high wages and furnished apartments. Instead, the workers charged they were paid only $2 to $3 an hour and forced to live in a factory dormitory. The John Pickle Company faces charges of human trafficking, violations of the Fair Labor Standards Act, and a discrimination charge from the Equal Employment Opportunities Commission. The company argues the immigrants were trainees and not employees and therefore not entitled to minimum wage.
It's official. Woefully understaffed nursing homes and hospitals were directly related to the deaths of thousands of elderly French citizens during an August heat wave. A new government report says that 11,000 people died as a direct result of the heat, many of them in nursing homes. But numbers kept by doctors put the death toll closer to 15,000. The government says the understaffing problem at health facilities was made worse by the fact that many people were on their yearly vacation, typically taken in August in France.
California businesses could soon be required to purchase health insurance for their employees. A bill introduced by San Francisco Senator John Burton would require businesses that employ 20 or more workers to either purchase health insurance for them or to contribute funds to a state-run pool that would in turn provide health coverage. Companies with 200 or more employees would also be required to cover the families of workers. Already, the legislation faces fierce resistance from business groups and the California Chamber of Commerce, which argues the bill would have a $4 billion price tag and would drive business from the state.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune into Animal Talk this Sunday.
Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're going to kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring Fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tonya Harding.
Tonya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Come on!
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of a brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
It's the Mike Malloy Show with special guest host Curtis Ellis.
That would be me, Curtis Ellis, right here in beautiful New York City on this 10th of September, 2003. I got so excited telling you all about Monica Gabriel, my guest who's going to be joining me in just a moment, that I forgot to tell you, coming up at the top of the hour, I'm going to be joined by Gerald Posner, the author of Why America Slept. This guy, he's a big investigative reporter. He's written about the CIA connection to heroin smuggling, and he's tried to debunk the conspiracy theories around the Kennedy assassination. Now he has looked into all of the missed signals, missed opportunities, and botched investigative techniques of the FBI in his book, Why America Slept. It's all about what went wrong and why September 11th happened the way it did. And his last chapter, he got a hold of some people who were there at the interrogation of one of the Al-Qaeda guys that they picked up in Pakistan. And this guy just spilled the beans on the whole Saudi connection to the Al-Qaeda people. It's very exciting, very interesting. Gerald Posner's had a little bit of media exposure. I just feel that this kind of information can't get enough exposure. So that's coming up at the top of the hour. But right now, I'm very happy and pleased and privileged to have joining me on this show, Monica Gabriel. Monica is one of the founders or the co-chairperson of the Skyscraper Safety Campaign, She lost her husband on September 11th and in the Twin Towers, and she is not content to just let business as usual reign. She decided to do something about it, asking why a huge building like that could just come down the way it did. Maybe there's something wrong. Maybe we need to know more. Am I summarizing your attitude there? Am I accurate, Monica?
You're doing a fine job.
I had the great pleasure and privilege to meet you a couple of weeks ago, and it's, you know, they're very, I don't like a lot of people, I'll tell you, but it's nice to know you. So tell me, how did you get this skyscraper safety campaign started? How did it all gel?
Well, actually, Sally founded the campaign. She was actually in touch with two professors here in New York early on. They had written an article in one of the local papers about a concern about the buildings and a need for an investigation. Buildings don't fall down, and they were concerned about preservation of critical forensic evidence of the buildings. And when she saw that article, she contacted them and had dialogue, and thus shortly afterward, the Skyscraper Safety Campaign was founded in honor of her son. At the same time she was doing this, I was making my, I don't know if you want to call them connections, but reaching out to people that were affected by September 11 as these small groups started to form. And every conversation started and ended with, but what happened? This shouldn't have happened. You know, isn't anybody looking for answers? And it was some time before someone finally gave me Sally's name to contact, saying that she was the only other one asking these questions. And we had a conversation, and, you know, it was like talking to a mirror. It was exactly the same questions I had, which was, you know, yes, the planes hit the buildings, but the buildings shouldn't have come down. I mean, people should have been able to get out. There were just so many questions and no answers. And if nothing else but the sheer fact that this happened warranted an investigation. We don't just assume something happened because, you know, we're told it was. And we fought very, very hard lobbying Congress, and eventually had two congressional hearings. And Congress, with the testimonies that were given, decided that we had brought up enough valid questions that it did warrant another investigation. There was a study going on at the time, which was certainly not an investigation by any sense of the name. And NIST was given the role in chief investigator. And NIST is the National Institute of Standards and Technology, and they are doing a two-year investigation into the collapse, doing analyses and studies, and it's got various components, and anyone can visit the website at NIST.gov. And
that's N-I-S-T.
NIST.gov. Mm-hmm. And there's a link to the World Trade Center, and they can take a look at some of the things that they've already uncovered. And already the fireproofing is at issue, the construction of the building. It was innovative. It was constructed steel and glass. It had one-acre floors. It was 110 stories. That's a quarter mile into the sky. Originally, when it was built, it didn't even have sprinklers. The sprinklers weren't put in until, I want to say, late 70s, but I'm not even quite sure when it was. They had, I think, a major fire in 75, and I think it was after that that the sprinklers were installed. I mean, that can be double-checked. But there were certainly a lot of questions that we had going to those issues. And then you backtrack a little bit, and you go to 93 when they had the bombing. And that was a very real wake-up call. It took 10 hours, I think, to evacuate people from those buildings. And this was in the middle of the day, so you can assume they were more populated.
Right.
And there were no, you know, we talk about lessons learned. Apparently, there were no lessons learned. Any research that we've done, we've not come up with any substantial change in business practices, either at the employer level, the building management level, or the Port Authority level, that goes directly to making sure that people that were in those buildings, whether they were workers, whether they were visitors, any kind of comprehensive plan was in place to get the people out in an emergency. And what we saw on 9/11 was a gross, gross failure of a system across the board, which resulted in 3,000 people needlessly dying. And many of them leapt to their death. Others were trapped in elevators. Others were trapped in offices that they couldn't get out. Others didn't know how to get out. I mean, some of the stuff is already being released in some of the studies that are being conducted. Columbia is doing Columbia University. Is doing a World Trade Center an evacuation study, and they're looking for all kinds of people that might have information. So anybody that has any information for either of these organizations is urged to send it to them.
I'm speaking with Monica Gabrielle of the Skyscraper Safety Campaign. You want a federal comprehensive investigation into how the structural integrity of those buildings failed.
Exactly.
Why?
Exactly.
And you'd also like to reform the building codes in New York City and nationwide so that something like this, we can be sure that it wouldn't happen again the same way.
Well, one of the key, important, critical issues to remember here is that the World Trade Center was a project that was built by the Rockefellers and the Port Authority. And the Rockefellers included the Port Authority because of their immunities, their ability for eminent domain, and for their ability to get monies, public monies, to have this massive project done.
I was explaining this to people before you came on. The Port Authority is this lovely institution that has all the power of government and all of the accountability of a private entity. So it can do anything it wants, but you can't ask any questions.
They are... It's a bizarre situation that was created to build bridges and tunnels, and with the World Trade Center, they veered off into construction and carried those immunities. So those buildings were immune from any building and fire codes. They did not have to have any inspections. They didn't have to allow the fire department in. If they allowed the fire department in and the fire department found flaws, faults, or things that need to be corrected, they could say, thank you very much, we'll see you, and they could tear them up and put them in the garbage. They did not have to listen to anyone. They're their own little fiefdom.
Right. And this, Jimmy Breslin referred to the people of Port Authority as shills and job holders. I mean, not very complimentary. These are a bunch of people who, I'm sure there are some good people over there, don't get me wrong, but the ruling principle was, thanks very much, we're going to do what we want anyway.
Exactly. And this doesn't go to the low-level workers. This goes directly to the top level, to the governors of New York and New Jersey, to that whole entity that benefits from this. The Port Authority doesn't have to pay any taxes. I mean, there are many issues that need to be addressed with that area. But those are some of the key issues that need to be looked at directly to find out, you know, what factor any of these multiple issues had with the deaths. At the end of the day, the study might say, no, everything was okay. But we need to have this investigation. We won't know. I refuse to believe just what I see with my eyes. I need to have scientific evidence. And when two massive structures like these collapse, people have got to wonder why. They can't just assume it was the planes. Those are separate incidences. The planes hit the buildings, yes. But what happened afterwards, that they collapsed in such a short amount of time, needs to be looked at. They were supposed to, the fire service themselves thought they had 4.5 to 5 hours to get the people out. Number, the first one collapsed in under an hour, and the second one in just over an hour.
Amazing. In your call for investigations and your search for answers and what went wrong, are you just being just pummeled and buried in information? Is everybody very forthcoming and just embracing you and your calls for openness? What's happening?
No, as a matter of fact, the city of New York is still withholding critical information. They have fire department tapes, I think, and police tapes that they haven't released. And I know for a fact that the McKinsey report that was put out afterwards, which was quite critical of the fire department itself, has the raw data, the backup that was put into the report. This is critical information to look at. These were interviews conducted very close to the event of the first responders, and they would include very relevant information as to what they encountered, and this would address the radio issues, which is not new. The radios didn't work for years. They knew this was an issue. The radios still don't work today. The blackout a few weeks ago, the same problem. There was, and it was the same problem across the board, so you know there were no lessons learned. People couldn't get out of the buildings. There was no emergency lighting. People didn't know where to go, and the emergency radios didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So
I was at a screening. I was in a skyscraper in Midtown when the lights went out, mm-hmm. and the announcement came over right away. There's been a power outage in the building. Please remain in the building.
See?
Yeah. Nobody did, but...
One of the problems is that after 9/11, people will run. People won't stay anymore because they remember what happened to those that stayed. And that causes problems anyway, because mm-hmm. then you have mass panic. The only
right.
way you can ensure safety in emergencies is to drill and drill and drill. When panic sets in, people do things automatically. And if you have done a full evacuation, you can automatically know what to do. The towers, they were totally indefensible. They knew they could never get people out. What they did was, and which is common practice, is to tell people to go two floors below where the suspected emergency is, fire or whatever, and wait for further instructions, because they always felt that they could contain the emergency or the fire to the floor and protect the people. Well, the emergency in the World Trade Center, you have a problem with. You have an acre of open floor space. There is no barrier to stop the fire from spreading. So if you have a fire at one end, it's going right straight through. There's nothing but cubby walls.
Right,
whatever
right.
internal renovations companies might have done, including internal stairways. You know, all these things need to be taken into factor.
So have the building codes been rewritten? Before we get to that, would you like to take a phone call? If someone has called in from B from New Orleans has phoned us at 800-825-5937 to join me and Monica Gabrielle from the Skyscraper Safety Campaign. B? Oh, well, B went back to the French Quarter. She's not on the phone. She's having a hurricane down on Bourbon Street, I guess.
Oh, geez.
So have the building codes been rewritten? What's happened? And I also understand that a lot of the structural steel that failed already, a lot of the evidence has not been maintained.
Right. Well, let's take the steel issue first, because I think that's important. One thing to remember is, and people forget, that this was a crime scene. You have an event, you have murderers, you've got dead bodies, you've got debris, you've got buildings that fell. It's a crime scene. It should have immediately been sealed off. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that was done. Everybody was allowed to trample through there. Number two, you have the evidence, which is the forensic evidence. And in this case, you've got the structure, the steel. Now, can you save, I don't know how many tons of steel from the building? No. But they were carting it off, and they could have saved it in fresh kills or, at various sites until scientists could come, take a look at what was there, and mark key pieces. In other words, the core columns, the impact zone, things like that. Maybe some pieces, critical pieces from the upper floors, the middle, the low. Let someone that knows what they're doing mark off the key pieces that are needed. Instead, what was done was that steel was carted off, shipped out, sent for recycling. The pieces of the steel were showing up all over the world. And what NIST is left with out of all that steel is about 250 pieces. And I believe they only have one piece, and they don't even know if it's substantial, of the core area. So the impact zone is missing. I mean, they're trying to put together, what happened. And this just makes the investigation that much more difficult. So now you have to take supposition. They're requesting for videos and footage and pictures to try to recreate what happened using scale mods and give us a definitive cause. It still will leave a lot of speculation.
I'm going to ask you to hold that thought. We're coming up on a little commercial break. If you can stay with me for just a few more minutes, I'd appreciate it. We'll finish up here in just a few seconds. I'm speaking with Monica Gabrielle, Skyscraper Safety Campaign. We're talking about what went wrong with those buildings and what's being done to fix it.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Hi, Tom Baudet from Motel 6. Some websites use outrageous gimmicks to attract visitors, like click here and get three wishes. But at Motel6.com, they have Click 6 web bargains that save you even more off the lowest price of any national chain. And you can only get them when you book online. Sorry, no three wishes, but you will have more money. That's usually wish number one anyway. I'm Tom Baudet, and we'll leave the light on for you. And a core hotel.
You're strapped in to 700 horses of pure power.
Gentlemen, start your engine.
But you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and you've got 500 laps to go.
I should have used Preparation H.
Cool it fast with Preparation H cooling gel. Cools on contact for fast relief.
Lap number 25.
Oh, man, I should have used Preparation H.
Preparation H cooling gel. Cools on contact. Uses directed.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to ieamericaradio.com. I'll be there.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to Animal Talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to Animal Talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to Animal Talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to Animal Talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
We're back. It's the Mike Malloy Show with special guest host Curtis Ellis.
Start me up. Here we are. The phone number is 800-825-5937. My name is Curtis Ellis. Don't panic. I've asked some people, where's Mike? Where's Mike? Don't worry. Mike will be back on Monday. He has not been snatched by John Ashcroft and sent to Guantanamo Bay. He will be back. You don't have anything to worry about. He's taking a well-deserved vacation. He's been slaving over this hot microphone too long. So he's taking some time off. My name is Curtis Ellis. I'm here with Monica Gabrielle from the Skyscraper Safety Campaign. She is trying to get a little accountability on the part of the building codes in this country after what happened on September 11th, what happened at the World Trade Center. Monica, we just have a few minutes. Thank you for staying with me. I'm not going to keep you much longer. Now, after September 11th, Mayor Rudolph Giuliani was practically sainted. I believe he is Saint Rudy now. I don't know if you'd care to share your do you feel this is a deserved reputation?
Well, to be honest with you, I'm a little aghast. Let's start with the fact that he's the mayor of a major city that is a target
right.
for terrorism, whether it's, you know, this or anything, and has been most definitely since 93. I was under the assumption, I think the families, or me particularly, on 9/11, that this veil of innocence was lifted, because you always think people are out there, you can go about your business and you'll be protected. Well, it found out definitely on 9/11 that's not the case across the board. And what I find astonishing is that Mr. Giuliani, as a former prosecutor, knows very well the laws of preserving evidence. And that goes to the steel issue. The other
right.
issue is the preparedness. It was his job as mayor, along with Governor Pataki as governor, to ensure the safety of the citizens of this city. Since 93, I don't recall ever hearing of any plan to take extraordinary caution to protect the citizens, most especially of those towers.
Which That's right, and they arrested some people around those towers, and there was evidence that they wanted to come back and try again. It's not like
there was clear evidence after 93. The reports I read afterwards was the Mr. Riscola of Morgan Stanley, who worked as a security, one of their security staff, I believe, was very, very concerned. He toured the facility. He showed the vulnerable spots. He wanted extra measures at certain places. He also said next time they're coming from the air. He drilled and drilled and drilled his people, and he was prepared.
And the city still never developed a plan,
nothing,
a terrorist
no plan.
Monica, we're out of time, but I really appreciate you taking time this night. I know it's been a long day for you.
It's been an
thank
exhausting
you.
Day.
Yeah,
thanks,
well,
Curtis.
Thank you very much, and all the best to you.
Thank
Keep
you.
Up the good work.
Thanks.
My name is Curtis Ellis. The phone number here is 800-825-5937. We have more to come, so don't go away. Gerald Posner, in the next hour, we're going to find out why America slept.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune in to the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Yes, I'm calling about about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off...
Why?
...is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
This is Mike Malloy, and so here we are. 2 years have passed since a terrorist attack on U.S. soil left more than 3,000 people dead, U.S. citizens and citizens from dozens of other nations. During these 2 years, we and the world have waited for a full and factual investigation by the Bush administration, on whose watch this horrific crime occurred. We continue to wait. Not only has the Bush administration failed to conduct an official inquiry into this massacre, it has also attempted, successfully so far, to impede, delay, and ultimately halt any attempt to unravel the awful truths of September 11, 2001. We must ask why this administration has worked so long and so hard to kill any search for the truth. We must ask why phone calls were made by the highest-ranking Bush administration officials, George Bush and Dick Cheney, to Democratic congressional leaders demanding that any investigation be conducted on nothing more than a superficial level. We must ask why the FBI was used by the Bush administration to intimidate Democratic members of Congress. These members had the temerity to suggest publicly that cooperation was not being provided by the country's intelligence-gathering organizations, that, in fact, Congress was even being denied the simplest information needed for its, at best, cursory and incomplete attempt to get to the truth of 9-1-1. We must ask why renegade FBI agents, in other words, agents who refused to participate in the code of silence imposed by Attorney General John Ashcroft, why those agents were reassigned, censured, or otherwise disciplined for attempting to expose the criminal incompetence of the U.S. security and intelligence communities under the control of the Bush administration. We must ask why investigations prior to the awful events of September 11th, investigations into potential terrorist acts such as flying jetliners into densely occupied office buildings, were stopped by the Bush administration. We must ask why the rulers of Saudi Arabia, business partners of the Bush family, and the chief exporters of militant Islam were declared by the Bush administration to be off limits in any comprehensive investigation into the financing of global terrorism of the sort that resulted in the destruction of the Twin Trade Towers in New York City on September 11, 2001. We must ask why members of the extended bin Laden family, also business partners of the Bush family, were allowed to leave the U.S. shortly after the bombing on 9-1-1, yet without being questioned by the FBI or other U.S. investigators. This was at a time when less important Arab speakers and people from the Middle East were being swept up in a law enforcement net spread across the U.S. and jailed. We must ask why the U.S. Air Defense System, a multi-billion-dollar system put in place specifically to guard against air attacks against us, had been ordered to stand down on September 11, 2001. We must ask why there was no response from the U.S. military when it became clear this nation was under attack. We must ask who issued those orders to stand down and why. We must ask why it was necessary immediately after 9-1-1 to pass federal legislation that, in effect, ended constitutional protections provided by the First, Fourth, Fifth, Eighth, and Tenth Amendments. We must ask why we were told by the highest law enforcement officer in the U.S., John Ashcroft, that any questions regarding these changes in domestic law by the public at large or members of Congress would be just short of an act of treason.
We must ask why the Bush administration ordered an attack, both unlawful and against the demands of the global community, against two countries that provided not one of the bombers who committed mass murder in this country on September 11, 2001. We must ask why the country that did provide 15 of the 19 killers, Saudi Arabia, was spared the so-called shock and awe of U.S. military might. We must ask why Iraq, why Afghanistan. We must ask why the Bush administration, 2 years after that day of death and destruction, continues to participate in the covering up, the hiding, and the destruction of the facts regarding its failure of leadership that led directly to the awful events of September 11th. This failure of leadership, or worse, participation, active or passive, in the events leading to and following the attack on this country constitutes the greatest failure in this country's history. And if we are to consider this country, our country, to have even a minimal moral center, we must ask why the frustration, the pain, and yes, the agony of the families of those killed on September 11th, 2001, the sons and daughters, the wives and husbands, the mothers and fathers, why their pain does not register with, nor matter to, the Bush administration. I am reasonably certain that on the third anniversary of the awful and immoral and criminal events of September 11th, 2001, these questions still will not have been answered. I'm Mike Malloy.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
This is Mike Malloy with the IE America Radio Network. Want to know more about our talk shows and personalities but don't know where to look? Do you want to find out what guests are scheduled or what topics we'll be discussing on our programs? Would you like to participate in live chat or vote in interactive polls? All this and more is available at the IE America Radio website. Bookmark it, stop surfing, and get active. Visit www.ieamericaradio.com today.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network. Right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
With special guest host Curtis Ellis.
Curtis Ellis right here with you for the next couple hours. The phone number here is 800-825-5937. If you can't get to a phone, but you happen to be one of those typist types, you can email me at fasttalkradio@yahoo.com. I am here with you, sitting in for Mike Malloy. Now, don't worry, Mike, we'll be back. Some of you may have heard his trenchant commentary there on questions to ask about what happened leading up to September 11th. Now, there is an investigation going on, the 9/11 Commission. In the next hour, I'm going to be speaking with one of the women, one of the four New Jersey moms who pushed for the creation of an independent investigation. An investigation and an independent commission which, by all accounts, it seems that this administration was not eager to jump into, and I'm putting it mildly, that this administration really did not push immediately for an independent investigation on the intelligence failures that led up to, that preceded September 11th. Speaking of intelligence failures and investigative failures which led up to September 11th, I have with me now Mr. Gerald Posner, who wrote his latest book, Why America Slept, The Failure to Prevent 9/11. Now, Gerald Posner, I've been familiar with his work, with your work. Gerald, thank you for joining me, by the way.
Curtis, great to be with you.
I have been familiar with your work for many, many years. First time I met you, you had just written a book called The Warlords of Crime.
Boy, I tell you, you know, I was just saying that to my wife today. You go back to the old days of chasing triads and the heroin business. So You know, here I am taking on a new bunch of bad guys and still trying after all these years to cause a ruckus and shine a little light on facts that a lot of people don't want to look at. So I'm still having a good time causing mischief on reporting.
Yes, and you do a darn good job of it, Gerald. Now, you heard you were on hold here for a while, and you probably heard some of those questions that our erstwhile host Mike Malloy was asking about.
Right.
How come this? How come that? You looked into a lot of this. What happened? Well, that's a silly question. Why don't you tell me what was the most glaring oversights or faux pas or missed opportunities that you found in your investigation
I think, Curtis, when you say what were the most, and this is very interesting, when I'm on a program with somebody, if Mike was there tonight on his show, he would focus on the Bush the Elder and Bush the Younger chapters, and many of those questions would be answered for him, and he would say, look what a terrible job Bush did in preparing the country for 9/11. No wonder it happened. When I'm on a conservative show with someone like Bill O'Reilly, he focuses on the Clinton chapters.
Right.
Look what a terrible job Clinton did. And what they're really both saying in the end, in this book, is I don't make the Clinton people happy and I don't make the Bush people happy, because I don't think there's a public leader since the Reagan years on in the last 25 years that can hold their head up proudly on what was going on under their administrations between the infighting of the FBI and the CIA, the way these two organizations never got along, especially when it came to terrorism issues, how they stepped on each other's toes, how they fought for turf, how they were fighting for budgets, how they failed to share information, not once, not twice, but multiple times, how we had our head in the sand about this Islamic fundamentalist threat, and we really thought that each case, like the World Trade Center 1 or the African bombings, were sort of independent criminal investigations, never looked at it as an ongoing jihad as the Islamics, the fundamentalists did. And I think that the most shocking thing for me here when I got into the work was the extent to which this was a preventable terror strike. That's not to say there wouldn't have been the equivalent of a 9/11 on another day. I mean, if we had stopped that particular terror strike, it wasn't as though the militants who so hate us were just going to melt away and say, ah, they really are clever. They stopped that one, so let's go home and be nice neighbors now. They would have worked on another plot that may have taken 3 or 5 years and might have been completely different. But this one was certainly preventable in many different ways, from the message we were sending in earlier administrations to the actual miscues and screw-ups by the intelligence people right up to the month beforehand.
Well, I saw, I read your book. It's a great piece of journalism here, a great piece of investigation. Not to mislead people. Now, you didn't do all the investigation yourself. You did draw on other people's research, but you pulled it all together, and it's not a 700-page multi-volume Warren Commission. It's very readable.
Yeah, it's not a doorstop, as I say. You're right.
Yeah.
And I do pull it together, which is one of the interesting things, because what's happened on this, Curtis, is, as you know, we all open up the New York Times, the LA Times, you know, and what we're seeing is individual stories. You hear about some FBI agent out in Phoenix who knew, you know, had a memo and was wondering if he might be able to invest flight schools, and the FBI said no. And we hear about Moussaoui, the so-called 20th hijacker, and they said no to a subpoena on his computer. But it's when it's put together in an order in which you see the magnitude that these aren't just isolated blunders, but it's almost a systematic failure, that it really becomes quite telling. And then, of course, there's what I call the new bits of information about the Germans and the Saudis and others, which is the part that often really gets under the skin of not only the Bush administration, but our so-called allies as well.
Yeah, I can't wait to get into that, particularly the interrogation. Everybody looks at Chapter 19, which is really a bombshell. Time magazine wrote about it. I don't think it's gotten quite the exposure that it deserves. We'll get to that in a minute.
And we should talk why about it not getting that exposure. I'm a little confused over that as well.
Yeah, I'm speaking with Gerald Posner, the author of Why America Slept. If you have a question and you'd like to address it to Mr. Posner, the number here is 800-825-5937. One of the things that jumped out at me was that a couple of these hijackers, they were listed in the phone book. They were listed in the phone book in San Diego, and the FBI knew these guys were in town. They knew they were in the country, but that's what I mean by when I say they were in town. And they never bothered to even look them up in the phone book.
Yeah,
I mean, what is going on here?
It's really astonishing. I mean, and you know, in the sense that in late 99, the end of 99, the CIA picks up these conversations, these intercepts, that two known terrorists in Malaysia are calling a couple of fellows they don't know in the Middle East and telling them to come up to Malaysia for this little summit meeting, a mini summit. So the FBI tells the Malaysian equivalent of the CIA does, have surveillance on this meeting. And so they have video surveillance. They see the two people coming in from the Middle East. It turns out to be two of the people eventually involved in the hijackings on 9/11, Al-Madar and Al-Hazmi. CIA then follows them. They know one of them, Al-Madar, has a multiple entry visa. He comes into the U.S. They both enter in January of 2000. The CIA doesn't tell a soul about it, doesn't tell the FBI, INS, transportation, no one. A month before the terror strikes, the CIA realizes with these FAA warnings of possible hijacking, suddenly these guys pop up again on their radar screen. And then they tell the FBI, and the FBI has a month to find them and doesn't realize, as you just said, sitting in San Diego in the White Pages, was it said Al-Hazmi Nawaf M, 6401 Mount Ada Road, gave his telephone number. If they checked with local banks, they would have found the men had bank accounts there. As a matter of fact, he not only had a bank at the local Bank of America branch, but used their real names on their driver's license, their Social Security cards, their credit cards. His 98 Toyota Corolla, bought by him for $3,000 in cash, was listed in his real name. And when they made their plane reservations for the 9/11 flights, they made it in their real name. If the CIA had shared this information about these two men being at a terrorist meeting in Malaysia at the end of 99 with other government agencies, the minute they made those plane reservations, they would have been red flagged and picked up. So that's one of the most frustrating parts of the story.
And I understand that one of the roommates of one of these guys was sort of an FBI informant. I don't know if it's one of these two guys, but one of the hijackers.
Yes, exactly. You're dealing with the same pair. One was an FBI informant, and another appears to be an informant for the Saudis, although he has denied that. And that's part of what I believe is hidden now in the 28 pages, part of what's hidden in the 28 pages of the congressional report that the Bush administration doesn't want to release. It's quite interesting. You were talking before at the top of the hour about how the Bush administration did not want to have an independent commission looking into the events of 9/11. And we still see this attempted, what I call, holding back information for the American public. They haven't released the 28 pages of the congressional report. Anonymous CIA sources are dumping all over my book, calling it, you know, fiction and just absurd and wrong. So it's back to the old thing. You know, on the JFK and MLK assassinations, when I was doing work on those, always realized afterwards that one of the worst things the government did, it's its own worst enemy, is this cover-up of information, the desire to hold things private because it's going to affect some unnamed source of intelligence, or it's going to expose somebody who's helping them on something else, and therefore they hold it back from being released. Eventually it gets released, and it just looks worse in the long run. This administration hasn't learned the lessons of history.
I said after September 11th, I said, this is the Kennedy assassination for a whole new generation. We have given birth to conspiracy theories for the next 150 years.
Yes, it's true. But, you know, and I feel in a very odd position here because normally, as you know, I've made something of a journalistic career by debunking conspiracies. I had a whole
right.
appendix in Case Closed. I know most people don't agree with me on Case Closed, but in that book I had an appendix called The Non-Mystery, Mystery Death, in which I went through, and my wife had done the research, and we sort of explained why we thought 103 so-called mystery deaths really weren't. And here I am in this case opening up the door to the very same thing, mystery deaths, and possibly igniting some conspiracy speculation. So I'm on the other side of the equation. An editor at Time told me last week, he said, Posner, you finally found your sandy knoll. I guess that's the equivalent of the grassy knoll.
You, and I must say, as a radio talk show host, thank you, Gerald. We now have something to talk about forever.
Well, you know, you only will thank me if this proves to be something that when we shake it all out in the end. You know, I've always said that although I didn't find conspiracies in the other cases, I'm an adamant believer that there are conspiracies, and governments do conspire against our own interests, and clearly in the case of some of our so-called Middle Eastern allies, there are conspiracies that are afoot at different times. And so this might be one of those cases in which we say at the end, aha, this was a vintage old classic style made, straight out of central casting conspiracy, it might well be.
Yeah, that's right. I'm speaking with Gerald Posner, author of Why America Slept. I'm reading in the dark here, the failure to prevent 9/11. One of the things that gets me is I'm trying to look through my files here. I printed out from the Washington Post on just a few days after September 11th, an FBI official quoted in there, an FBI agent quoted as saying, oh, yes, we knew that there were terrorists in flight training schools. And that's sort of dropped off the radar screen. And it's the Washington Post that this article ran in.
An unnamed FBI agent?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, it's very interesting. The only one I could imagine that would be, and it might have been if they had actually been able to tie into him so quickly, would be the sort of the poor FBI agent out in Phoenix who was sounding the drum on this, and everybody was ignoring him. Nobody thought that there was anything to it. And in fact, he was convinced, and he was right, that there were, in fact, Islamic militants in flight training schools, and he wanted the central headquarters to do a search of flight training schools around the country, and they
right.
said that's ridiculous and a waste of money.
We'll pick this up on the other side. I'm speaking with Gerald Posner here on the IE America Radio Network.
Hey, Mom, here's some good news. Tax rebate checks are here just in time for back-to-school shopping. And Sears will cash your tax rebate check free of charge with any purchase. Here's some more good news. Right now, during the Sears Great 3-Day Sale, save 50% on great back-to-school items throughout the store. Plus, all jeans are on sale. Brands like Levi's, Lee, Canyon River Blues, LEI, Bongo, and Mud. So hurry in now through Saturday. You don't want to miss the Great 3-Day Sale. 3-day sale ends August 16th. All jeans on sale through August 30th. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Sears. Good life. Great price.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places, a ray of hope in these dark days, and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Sound the alarms. Bring the children indoors. Call out the gendarmes. Tom Mad Dog DeLay is off his leash again. The Texas Republican is majority leader of the U.S. House, and the more power he gets, the weirder he becomes. Remember the egomaniacal extremism of Newt Gingrich? DeLay is Newt on Viagra. Not a pretty image. A former pest exterminator from the Houston suburbs, he has steadily wormed and squirmed his way to the political top, effectively becoming boss of the House. He's done it by making himself the legislative point person for the most extreme right-wing groups, by creating a far-flung network of rabidly partisan political operatives throughout the country, and by using his public position to extract huge sums of campaign money from corporate lobbyists who need legislative favors. Indeed, DeLay is known as the Hammer for his mafia-like demands that lobbyists give money only to Republicans, and for his insistence that lobbying firms hire no Democrats, only Republicans, or see their legislative demands die. Not content to be a partisan monkey wrench in the House, he's now branching out to the supposedly independent judicial branch of government. In an unprecedented attempt at political intimidation, he has created a 13-member task force of House Republicans to monitor all decisions of all federal judges, with the blatant intention of browbeating any who fail to toe the right-wing and corporatist ideological lines. DeLay, doing his best imitation of Joe McCarthy, unabashedly said, "Today, we in the House are putting America's judges on alert. We are watching you." The chair of DeLay's new McCarthy-esque witch hunt, harking back to Tom's exterminator days, says that they are out to, quote, disinfect the judiciary. This is Jim Hightower saying, DeLay is not merely a delusional nutball, he's dangerous. The exterminator has become the pest.
We're back. It's the Mike Malloy Show with special guest host Curtis Ellis.
Hey, folks, the phone number here is 800-825-5937. That's me, Curtis Ellis, with Gerald Posner, author of Why America Slept, The Failure to Prevent 9/11, or September 11th, as I like to call it. 9/11 sounds like 7/11 to me, but that's a whole other story. If you have a question, you can call 800-825-5937, or you can email me at fasttalkradio@yahoo.com. During that break, Gerald, I did find that story. You may want to check it out at the Washington Post. It was written by Steve Faneroo and James Grimaldi. I'm sure they're good friends of yours because
right.
You know everybody. You've been everywhere. And,
almost. I sometimes think so, but I actually don't know them, only their bylines.
Yeah, Sunday, September 23rd, 2001, first sentence, federal authorities have been aware for years that suspected terrorists with ties to Osama bin Laden were receiving flight training at schools in the U.S. and abroad. According to their interviews with all these senior government officials who acknowledged that law enforcement officials were aware, than fewer than a dozen people with links to bin Laden had attended flight schools. However, the official said there was no information to indicate the flight students had been planning suicide hijacking attacks. No, they wanted to go straight and get a good job at Northwest Airlines.
Yes,
but they weren't allowed to because they didn't drink because they were Muslims, so they couldn't get
exactly
a job there at Northwest.
Right.
But it
is amazing in light of that, that, I mean, not only was there right, you're talking, you know, in the summer of this period, you had this memo coming in from Phoenix that essentially was saying, I have suspicions of what I picked up from, you know, local offices here. This FBI agent Williams was saying to headquarters, we've got to do some research on what's happening around at different flight schools in the United States because I happen to believe that there are Middle Eastern men who are enrolled in local flight schools who are not interested in learning to fly, but are interested instead about airport construction and security and airplane engineering and things like this.
And how to make fake IDs, all kinds of things.
It's almost as bad as that. And what's undeniable is that the Phoenix memo, as I call it, the Phoenix memo, never made it above middle management at FBI headquarters. Even though American flight schools are, you know, traditionally popular with thousands of international students and have also been a place where there were certainly some militants over time the FBI was concerned about. Also, from April to September, what a lot of people won't realize, I actually have a list of this in the book, as you know, Curtis, in a several-month period leading up to September 11th, we think there were no warnings, but the FAA was issuing advisory after advisory about the fact that they had picked up chatter, the CIA was telling them, about terrorist groups looking to strike U.S. civil aviation interests.
This is the thing that gets me. Yeah, you've got a list. It's as long as my arm of warnings. Now, with all of these warnings out there, okay, so nobody said, by the way, they're going to hijack planes in Boston and Newark, and they're going to fly them into the World Trade Center. No, okay, they didn't have specific information like that. But they had enough warnings that something big was in the works. We don't know exactly which day. Now, right, with all of that pre-information and kind of warm-up warning stuff, when somebody looked at a radar screen in NORAD headquarters and saw four aircraft simultaneously veering off course in the most populated part of the country within minutes of the state of New York, the financial capital, and Washington, the national capital, don't you think they might have said, I think this is what they were talking about?
Yeah, I agree with you, and I've looked into that, you know, extensively, and of course I know that it's the reason that some people think, they can't be that incompetent. We couldn't have spent billions of dollars on civil air defense and have them be this bad. But I think that's exactly why I've always been against the idea of anything that remotely resembles a missile defense system, because I know it's just a boondoggle for the companies involved, and it's something that will never work. I mean, here on NORAD, you literally had them frozen at the switch because they thought that these might be hijackings. So they're waiting for demands to come in, as opposed to running planes up that might scare the hijackers into doing something rash.
Mm-hmm.
They're waiting to see where these planes are going to come down and then deal with them in terms of a hostage situation. nobody is actually thinking at that moment suicide, although we had investigated the flight of, you know, Egypt Air 990, in which the co-pilot is heard saying what some believe to be a little prayer before he, there's a,
right,
what apparently is a fight with the pilot, and then he takes the plane down, killing everybody aboard, including a number of Egyptian, you know, commanders. And in addition, we had picked up the evidence.
Hold that thought, Gerald. Gerald Posner, Why America Slept, The Failure to Prevent September 11th. We're going to come up with more of Gerald in just a moment.
Hey, Mom, here's some good news. Tax rebate checks are here just in time for back-to-school shopping. And Sears will cash your tax rebate check free of charge with any purchase. Here's some more good news. Right now, during the Sears Great 3-Day Sale, save 50% on great back-to-school items throughout the store. Plus, all jeans are on sale. Brands like Levi's, Lee, Cannon River Blues, LEI, Bongo, and Mud. So hurry in now through Saturday. You don't want to miss the Great 3-Day Sale. 3-day sale ends August 16th. All jeans on sale through August 30th. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Sears. Good life. Great price.
You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show, 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time, Monday through Friday on IE America Radio Network.
Birds that are migrating to their winter homes sometimes fly to exhaustion around transmission towers. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Communication towers for radio and TV might be hazardous to birds that are on their migration to and from their winter homes. Various studies have documented that hundreds of thousands of birds die annually at these towers, but the studies have not given scientists a clear understanding of why this is happening. Al Manville is a wildlife biologist who works for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in its Division of Migratory Bird Management. He's the agency's top representative to look at the problems of avian impacts and structural issues. Manville says the birds appear to get confused when they're flying and come close to transmission towers, especially when they see their lights at night.
Documentation has shown in studies that the birds will be attracted to the lights, and they then seem to fly around the lights and the towers in sort of a little tornado of birds. And in the process of flying around the towers, they strike the guy wires, they may strike the towers, they may strike themselves, or they may become totally disoriented or exhausted, and in some cases actually crash to the ground.
Manville says that scores of independent studies over the past 50 years have documented this problem. He says it appears that part of the problem occurs when migrating birds encounter rough weather and drop down to lower altitudes.
The combination of the bad weather and the birds moving lower and the attraction of the light may create a fatal recipe for a number of birds, as we've seen documented well in the literature back into the late 1940s.
Manville says studies are underway to try to figure out the importance of tower height and lighting on the bird mortalities. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
At Animal Talk, we think deep thoughts. We think about things that most people don't think about, such as, do dogfish chase catfish? Do jellyfish taste good with peanut butter? These are things that bother us. Why is it that Donald Duck doesn't wear any pants, but when he comes out of the shower, he wraps a towel around his waist?
Dude, you need a hobby.
Oh.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network. Animal Talk, helping you with your pets and talking to celebrities like Ted Nugent.
Everybody's got to learn to support hunting, fishing, and trapping, because that's where the dollars come from, to save habitat.
You know, every time you get done talking, I feel like I should say amen.
But because I live the truth. That's what my book, God, Guns, and Rock and Roll, it's on the New York Times bestseller list. It sounds like I'm bragging, because I am.
I love the book, Ted.
Thank you. It's like we're at a damn campfire, isn't it?
Animal Talk, Saturdays and Sundays on the IE America Radio Network.
We're back. It's the Mike Malloy Show with special guest host Curtis Ellis.
But I ain't half as special as you guys out there in Radio Land. Phone number here is 800-825-5937. I am Curtis Ellis, and I am talking with Gerald Posner, author of Why America Slept, The Failure to Prevent 9/11. Gang, you got to run out there and buy this book if you're interested in all the screw-ups, mess-ups, and bleep-ups that led up to that horrible event, which happened 3 years ago today, tomorrow, or tomorrow today, whatever. Actually, the terrible events happened even today, because when you read about all of the things that the FBI and the CIA missed, and the disaster preceded September 11th. I don't want to get hung up on this flight school thing, but this article from the Washington Post is just amazing. These flight school people talk about how the FBI people visited them back in 96. And as you know, when they broke up this ring in Manila, they found of terrorists in Manila who wanted to crash planes into the middle of the Pacific Ocean. They also had planes to crash had plans to crash planes into Langley, Virginia, into the CIA headquarters. The idea of using airplanes, as you write about in your book, using them as guided missiles, it was not a foreign new concept, despite what Condoleezza Rice might have said, that we had no idea that somebody might use a hijacked airplane to crash into a building.
And what's really amazing, Curtis, about that is Condoleezza Rice might have had no idea, but anybody inside the FBI and CIA certainly should have had that idea times 10 and should have passed it on to the administration, the new administration, which should have known it as well.
Yeah, and it's amazing, as one of those four moms from New Jersey who pushed for an independent 9/11 commission said, it's just amazing that the day after this, they just knew which flight schools to go to. The FBI knew immediately what flight schools to go to.
They're very seldom that quick. That's right.
Yeah, and I got to ask you before we go, the real good stuff is this Abu Zubaydah,
right? You say Zubaydah, I say Zubaydah. No.
I want to get to him in a minute. We got a call from Billy in New Hampshire, but before we get to Billy, I just got to ask you real quick. Have you ever heard of this guy, Daniel Hopsicker? He's some kind of claims to be an investigative journalist. I don't know if he's a conspiracy wacko or what, but he talks. Go ahead. Have you heard about him? Okay, because he writes about the flight schools in Venice, Florida. Now, how come there were two schools that all these guys went to, and they're both run by Dutch nationals? The flight schools were run by Dutchmen, and they particularly were advertising for students in Hamburg, Germany.
Which, of course, is the area where this was hatched, this plot for 9/11. And
right.
I have a chapter called The German Connection, which one of the guys who knew everybody there, I believe, is an informant for the German FBI, and is one of the reasons that he's still free, and despite American requests to pick him up, they haven't done a thing about him. So
yeah,
that would be quite interesting. They were advertising in Hamburg, and it might be one of the reasons that Ada and the rest chose those schools.
There seems to be, I mean, I love conspiracy theories, I really do, and one of them, my favorites, is, I'm not saying I believe them, I just love them, one of them is that perhaps this Ata ring, that the CIA was tailing these people, kind of running an operation, hoping to infiltrate Al-Qaeda or infiltrate some terrorist cells. Let these people come in, go to flight schools, we'll follow them, and they'll lead us to something else, and it just kind of got out of control.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, if the CIA had been half that good, this plot wouldn't have taken place. The closest they came was following two of them to Malaysia and then losing them when they came in here.
Losing them, right.
And then panicking a month before.
And then there's that other story, which is not a conspiracy theory, but is pretty well documented, about Israeli intelligence running some operation here.
Some operation that I lost you there. Hello?
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas.
Hello?
Intelligence. Hello. Hi there. I'm here.
I lost you for a moment there, Curtis.
Yeah.
All I heard was Israeli intelligence running it up, and then you cut out, and I thought to myself, you know, the other day when I was on the Today Show, people on the West Coast complained that when the broadcast was out, that it was all staticky and hard to hear, and I thought, boy, if I lose the connection here, I haven't lost a radio connection in many years, I must tell you.
The conspiracy theories are being hatched already.
Are being hatched right now, so I'm not quite sure what you said about Israeli intelligence.
Israeli intelligence was running an operation here in America with, there were people, art students selling art or something, knocking on doors of sensitive military installations, and it's been documented. The U.S. government even responded to some of these allegations and confirmed it to a large degree, that apparently there was some type of Israeli operation going on where they had rented apartments right down the street from some of these 9/11 hijackers. But I don't want to get off into that. I'm just going to lay that out there and just let people stew in that. Billy in New Hampshire, did you have a question for my guest, Gerald Posner, here?
Yes. Thanks for taking my call, and thank you, Mr. Posner, for writing that book.
Thank you, Billy.
I've been following 911, I guess, since, like most of us, through what we can get from the internet or when folks like yourself put out books. And 2 years afterwards, I'm still sitting here scratching my head wondering, well, what exactly happened?
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple questions that I was wondering if you addressed in your book. For instance, I've read on the, or maybe you can put these, maybe you can put these rumors or myths to rest. John O'Neill, he
right.
was head of the Saudi investigation team.
He was investigating the coal, the U.S. coal bombing, and as I understand it, I think you say it in your book, his visa was actually pulled by an American embassy official over there in Yemen.
Yeah, and then he had accepted a security job. He sort of had been pushed out. He was one of the few heroes in here who was sort of seeing this problem all the way coming along. He accepted a security job down at the World Trade Center, of all places, head of security there.
Right.
He was in his office on the day and, of course, died.
And didn't he resign in protest over the new administration policies to back off the Bin Laden/Saudi investigation?
Yeah, his problem wasn't actually over the new administration policies to back off of Bin Laden. His problem was long-term inside the Bureau and the way that he thought they were soft-peddling the approach to the Saudis
right.
and to Bin Laden. And,
right.
and the Bureau's problems were the same. I've got to tell you, under Clinton and Bush, it didn't get better under either one.
But isn't it true under Clinton, there was never a terrorism warrant, I forget the acronym they used, that was rejected when, as you mentioned, the Phoenix case where the agent alerted his superiors and was rebuffed from the top.
I think you're talking about the FISA warrants, that there is some secret court that could grant under lax or more loose rules wiretaps, et cetera,
right.
information searches. And any time Janet Reno saw one of these, they all got approved. And there's
right.
been this thing story floating around that then under the new administration, some of these weren't approved.
I mean, it kind of falls into a pattern of behavior. You know, you pick up these stories here and there. And, you know, we're on the outside looking in, and with all these questions and them trying to squash the investigation, you wonder, you just can't. And then
yeah. So what did you find, Gerald? Did you see that, has there been a, did you find any kind of pattern that the Bush administration was any worse or better than the Clinton administration in pursuing terrorism? Were they more lax?
They really would have followed a pretty similar policy before 9/11. 9/11 changed the whole equation. I think that if the Bush people had been in power for the same 8 years that Clinton had been in, there might not have been that much different actually done along the way. Clinton certainly was not. Clinton viewed terrorism as a criminal justice problem. After World Trade Center 1, he never asked for a briefing on what had happened. He never met with the CIA director for 2 years after that. He addressed the issue once, and when the Justice Department actually wanted to look into possible foreign sponsorship of some of the terrorists, the White House said, no, you know, try it as a criminal case. Don't make this an international case. So I'm not sure if that might have been a different response with the Republicans, but it just wasn't something on Clinton's radar. He had other issues that he considered, Middle East peace, his policies on welfare reform, all those things were his priorities. Welfare just wasn't high on the radar, unfortunately. Now,
yeah.
I think that when Billy says, what don't we know, Billy, we don't know a lot so far. And I'm trying to provide here in this book, as Curtis said before, especially in the last chapter, some of the answers, but there's a lot more still to come out over the years. This
right.
is the first of a number of books, I think, that will tell us some of the things we don't know, and it comes back to the Saudis and Pakistanis, in my view.
I really want to get to that. Billy, I don't want to cut you off.
Actually, can I just raise one last issue? Because
make it quick, please.
Yep.
Make it very quick. Yeah.
If this was Clinton, don't you think the media would have brought up the existing connections between the Bush and the Bin Laden families? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
I think they would have, and I think that one of the things the Bush administration is not at all sensitive to is the fact that it is filled with all of these oil interests and people with oil interests. And when you see how they what they are not doing with the Saudis, which Curtis and I think are going to go to next, you'll even be more enraged.
Yeah, so tell us, please, about Abu Zubaydah.
Right. Well, what happens is he turns out, Curtis, to be the third-ranking guy in al-Qaeda. When we capture him, we capture this guy. He's 31 years old. He's a trusted lieutenant to bin Laden. He's run the eastern Afghan training camps where a lot of the terrorists went through, and then he ran the operation on the USS Cole and the Millennium Plot. The American Special Forces and Special Ops, CIA, track him down to western Pakistan in March of 2002, and they pick him up in a middle-of-the-night raid, which I describe sort of in detail in here. He's wounded three times, and the first thing they want to know is, hey, Zubaydah, you know, do you know about any imminent attack, anything coming up right away? And they use, it's very interesting, I think a lot of your listeners are going to be fascinated at some of the interrogation techniques. One of the reasons the CIA is so furious with this book is my disclosure of some of those interrogation techniques,
yeah,
including a short-acting narcotic infusion that increases his pain when he's not cooperating and gives him some pain relief when he is, and still he doesn't cooperate. 3 days. I mean, this is a tough guy. So they ship him out to Afghanistan. They put him in a room, and this is one of these bits of serendipity that is wonderful in the way that it works out because it shocks the American interrogators. They set up a room that's going to look like a fake Saudi jail because they think that if Zubaydah believes that he's being held by the Saudis, he will know the Saudis do hard interrogations, i.e. torture. Then they give you a 30-minute trial and behead you. So he'll say, oh, my God, you know, I don't want to be in Saudi captivity. Ship me back to the Americans if you can, and he'll be willing to talk to them. They add some truth serum. It's not really truth serum, but it's sodium pentothal, and it relaxes you a little bit, and your inhibitions drop. And in come the two fake Saudi interrogators. And instead of being afraid of them, Zubaydah says he's relieved. He almost says, you know, thank God it's you guys here. Here's a telephone number. He gives them a number from memory, a private cell phone number, and he says, call this guy up, and he'll tell you what to do. And it turns out to be, for the first time, we have names. It turns out to be Prince Ahmed bin Salman bin Abdulaziz. And you say, who's he? He's the nephew of the king of Saudi Arabia. He's the owner of the largest media empire in the kingdom. He owns the Kentucky Derby winner, war emblem from 2002. He's often in London and New York, and the Americans are shocked because this isn't a guy who's thought to be an Islamic militant. He's thought to be quite pro-American. So they come back and they say, you're a liar. And he says, no, I'm not. As a matter of fact, here are two other Saudi princes to call. One's a former military man. One's a contemporary of his, related to the royal family. And he's trying now to play his get-out-of-jail-free card. He said the head of the Air Force in Pakistan, this Air Marshal Mushaf Ali Mir, he was our contact for al-Qaeda for years. And he supplied his arms and money. Later, he tells the Americans one more thing, which is that two of these fellows, Prince Ahmed and the Pakistani air marshal, knew beforehand that there would be an attack in America. They didn't know what type, an action by al-Qaeda in early September, and did nothing about it to warn these countries. Now, here's the follow-up to this. So you say, so what? Is it true or not? Well, when Zubaydah found out that he was being held by Americans, he had been duped. He wasn't held by the Saudis. He tried to kill himself with a bedsheet. They stopped him, and he was, you know, still alive. But he denied the whole story. He said, I made that all up. Mm-hmm. It's not true. I just made that up to stop the Saudis from torturing me. Well, it would be a little bit like you or me, Curtis, having the private cell phone numbers of Donald Rumsfeld and Colin Powell. So they're a little tough to get. But what happened afterwards is interesting. The Americans investigated the CIA to see if it was true, and they couldn't determine whether these were the links to the royal family or not. So instead, they gave some of the information to the Saudis and Pakistanis to judge what their reaction would be. Both of the countries came back and adamantly denied it, said, not true. If we had any inkling there was going to be an attack on you, our great ally, we would have told you. Then, 4 months after Zubaydah told us these names, the first prince named by him, Prince Ahmed, dies in a Riyadh hospital, the Saudi capital, of doctors say a heart attack. Actually had intestinal surgery, and a few days later he dies. They say, gee, it must have been a blood clot that traveled to his heart. He wasn't walking around enough after surgery, and he was a prince, so you couldn't really tell him what to do. He's 43.
Uh-huh.
The next day, the 41-year-old, second man named by Zubaydah, Prince Sultan, the military man, dies in a car wreck. One car involved, only his. He's on the way to Ahmed's funeral, and the Saudis say it must have been high speed. Then a few days later, the third prince.
He hit a tree. He hit a tree in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, right. There aren't
the
many,
only
but
tree.
He found one.
Yeah.
The third prince named by Zubaydah to the Americans dies a few days after that. He's 25 years old, Prince Fahd. He's my personal favorite because the Saudi official explanation for death is he dies, quote, of thirst in the middle of the Saudi summer. Now, I will tell you, if you're from Wisconsin and you're in the middle of the desert in Saudi Arabia and don't know it gets very hot there, you might not have an extra bottle of water and you could be in trouble. But you would think the Saudi prince might know to bring along a little water when he's traveling around Saudi Arabia in the summertime. And as for Mushaf Ali Mir, the Pakistani air marshal who runs the Air Force, well, he had the bad luck of choosing one of his own military planes that had recently been inspected and passed inspection, took off in clear weather, and about 15 minutes after takeoff, it went down with his wife and all his top aides aboard, about 15 people dead. That one's still being investigated. So the only one alive that Zubaydah told the Americans about is the current ambassador to London, a fellow called Prince Turki bin Faisal, who also happened to be the head of Saudi equivalent of the CIA for 25 years and was taken out of his post about 10 days before September 11th. He's denied the entire thing, says absolutely not true. In my book, I say he met with bin Laden in 91 and made a secret deal with him to have bin Laden leave the kingdom and do jihad in other countries, and Saudi Arabia would keep the money flowing to him. He says, that's a lie. I didn't make a deal with him. And Posner says I met him in 91. I haven't seen since bin Laden since 1990. That's a good one. And essentially, the Pakistanis have called it rubbish. The CIA says it's just not true. And what does it come back to? Your viewers will know this. The Bush administration is taking it easy on the Saudis, and this is what should not be happening.
And we'll be back with more of Gerald Posner. Don't go away. We're here on the IE America Radio Network. The number here is 800-825-5937.
Mom? Dad?
Someone's going to try and get me to take drugs.
Want to do something about it?
You're going to have to make me tell you where I am and who I'm with every day.
Don't like the sound of that?
Tough. You got to be the grown-up.
Kids with involved parents are less likely to try drugs. So ask them, who, what, where, when? Questions. They're the anti-drug.
Call 1-800-729-6686 for more information. Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Hey, Mom, here's some good news. Tax rebate checks are here just in time for back-to-school shopping. And Sears will cash your tax rebate check free of charge with any purchase. Here's some more good news. Right now, during the Sears Great 3-Day Sale, save 50% on great back-to-school items throughout the store. Plus, all jeans are on sale. Brands like Levi's, Lee, Canyon River Blues, LEI, Bongo, and Mud. So hurry in now through Saturday. You don't want to miss the Great 3-Day Sale. 3-day sale ends August 16th. All jeans on sale through August 30th. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Sears. Good life. Great price.
Hi, folks. Jesse Ventura here to talk to you about InPhone, the advanced, enhanced, totally modern directory assistance available all across this great country of ours. Just dial 888-411-1111, and the super-friendly operator will help you access phone numbers or movie times, even driving directions to the theater. So call InPhone at 888-411-1111 and tell them Governor Jesse sent you. InPhone. How can we help you?
Only 89 cents for any call up to 15 minutes. Only 5 cents a minute after that. Your first 5 calls are free.
When I wear black, even a little dandruff shows. And my old dandruff shampoo just wasn't cutting it. I still had flakes and dry scalp. So I switched to Selsun Blue Moisturizing Shampoo with aloe and moisturizers. Doctor recommended Selsun Blue has a proven ingredient to relieve dandruff. Plus, it keeps my hair and scalp healthy and flake-free.
If you see flakes, try Selsun Blue. Selsun Blue Moisturizing Dandruff Shampoo.
I'm telling you, it really works.
Never wear black without the blue. Selsun Blue. Use as directed.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
The Mike Molloy Show.
Joining us now is Jason Campbell with the Christian Action Network.
Well, since 1991, the gay movement has gone down to Disney to do these gay days. You've had events where you've had Mickey Mouse with Goofy in sexual positions.
Homosexual movies are shown on the Disney transportation systems. And what kind of movies, for God's sake, do they show on these buses?
Triple X.
Oh, you're kidding.
If a child's riding beside one of the buses and looks up and says, Daddy, what is that on the television monitor? Right. It's going to be an embarrassing moment.
Oh, it'll be worse than embarrassing. The child will be scarred for life.
Right. That's what the homosexuals want.
Well, I know. They're after the kid. Now, the only thing I'm afraid of is somebody just tuned in the program and never heard the program before and just went, oh, Jesus, this guy is really a right-wing freak.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Tune in to IE America Radio Network weekdays for the best in progressive talk radio. The Tom Hartman Show.
That's the Tom Hartman program right here on the IE America Radio Network.
The Radio Free Speed Zone.
Welcome, one and all. Tony Trupiano with you on this Tuesday afternoon. Hope everything is well where you're at. It is okie dokie where I sit.
Family Talk.
This is Family Talk with Dr. Mike Riera.
The All-American Talk Radio Show.
All-American Talk Radio with Peter B. Collins and Peter Lawford.
The Mike Malloy Show.
I know I have a reputation of being fiery, hard-edged, passionate, outspoken, opinionated, and sometimes explosive. And that reputation is well-deserved because I am. I'm a liberal with a microphone, and that makes me dangerous.
For more information on these shows and other shows, or to listen live, visit us on the web at ieamericaradio.com.
We're back. It's the Mike Malloy Show with special guest host Curtis Ellis.
That's me real quickly here. I'm with Gerald Posner, author of Why America Slept. I know we have a very short time here, Gerald. Before we go, I want to... Now, this is dynamite stuff, this Abu Zubaydah interrogation. Why hasn't this gotten more exposure? This is dynamite.
Well, you know, I'm wondering about that, too. Time did a review on it. That was great. They were part of the mainstream and sort of elite press. They did it. But otherwise, I'm wondering, you know, where the Times is on this and the Washington Post and others. I'm not quite sure. You would think they'd either be out there trying to get an intelligence source to disprove it if they wanted to play the role for the Saudis, or to verify it and go further with it, which I think good investigative reporters should now be doing. And maybe they're working on it. But I also wonder where the Bush administration is on it in terms of confronting the Saudis. Now, if they're doing it behind the scenes, great, but I certainly don't see any evidence of that. And I think that the feeling is we can't embarrass our Saudi allies since they are belatedly now in the war on terror with us since these May bombings in Riyadh. And the same for the Pakistanis. All these years of having helped, you know, the Taliban and being there for al-Qaeda and knowing where bin Laden was and keeping them free are forgiven because you've been helping us since we've invaded Afghanistan. It's quite a policy to me.
Yeah, yeah, it's amazing. There's been Trey from Dallas called in. He wanted your reaction on that story. The James Woods, the actor, was on a flight before September 11th, and he saw what looked like a dry run.
Yeah, it's very interesting on that. The FBI was still looking into that. Whether, in fact, I mean, Woods was suspicious of these people. They were sitting up in first class as though it was the equivalent of that, and there may well be some evidence that there was that type of dry run. The real question is, was it the eventual hijackers themselves or somebody else doing it for them to test the system and see what it was like, and those people yet haven't been rounded up? Today in the New York Times, there was a great report about the fact there's a split between the congressional investigators and the FBI as to whether the hijackers were assisted in this country by a network of people who knew what they were up to and were helping them as part of sort of an aid group for al-Qaeda, or whether they were just helped out of the charity of local Arab Americans who were moving them along and getting them jobs and giving them loans without knowing what they were up to, and that still hasn't been figured out.
That's right, yeah. Big story in the Washington Post about that. Because I remember right afterwards Ashcroft said, or Mueller or somebody said, no, there's no support, we've got them all. And now they still don't know. Gerald Posner, thank you very much. Author of Why America Slept, The Failure to Prevent 9/11. Everybody go out and buy this book. It's very... I'll say it right off. And thank you for signing this copy of mine right over the phone. That was a very good trick,
I'm
Gerald.
I'm glad to be able to do it. And I will say, only buy a copy of the book, though, Curtis, if you're ready to get angry, because it will make you angry.
And we're going to hear in the next hour from Patty Casaza, one of the widows of 9/11, who's been pushing for an independent commission, who believes we need more information out there so we can all get angry and make our government do something.
She's been great.
Which is the way this system is supposed to work.
Radio Network, copyright 2003.
Mr. Rogers' parenting book. Fred Rogers, a pleasure to have you here.
What I'm hearing you say is that you delight in creating community.
I do. I think thinking about things and working through problems and issues is an important tool.
I'm just thinking that the world could take some lessons from the Doug Steffen neighborhood.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, helping you with your pets and talking to celebrities, like from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies, Raven Simone. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have 2 chinchillas and I have a big Briard.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out, so he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Charisse Dolittle, who talks to the animals, and you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All they need is love.
Animal Talk, Saturdays and Sundays on the IE America Radio Network.
America Radio Network News. I'm Darren Copeland. Questions are rising as to why American soldiers are still being wounded or killed since the announcement was made that major war combat had ended on May 1st. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld answered those questions at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. today by saying thousands of criminals are on the loose.
Saddam Hussein opened his jails and let out somewhere between 110 and 115,000 criminals and put them loose on the Iraqi population.
He explained there is sabotage taking place from the remnants of the Ba'athist Party and foreign terrorists are coming in from neighboring countries. Rumsfeld says it's going to be a tough job, one that will not be instantaneous. 2 years after the World Trade Center collapse, many like Carter Hodgkin of nearby Battery Park City are still feeling the pain.
The coughing wasn't so bad for me as it was with other friends, and I didn't have nosebleeds like they've had. I just had this mysterious ache all over my body. It's horrible.
She says it took the EPA a year and a half to decontaminate her apartment, which was filled with thick gray dust and exposed to months of smoke and fumes from ground zero. Hodgkin, who calls her illness the Twin Towers disease, was too sick to work and lost her job. She says the government lied about the health risks and, in doing so, prevented her from getting FEMA's help to move. She says her life will never be the same.
Men and women, do you remember when you were thin? You look great no matter what clothes you put on. Now that great-looking body you once had no longer has to be a memory. Introducing Fat Inferno. Fat Inferno is a new diet supplement that cuts carbohydrates and increases your metabolism, all in one tablet. Fat Inferno boosts your metabolism so you burn off more calories even while you rest. In clinical trials performed on the active ingredients in Fat Inferno, people lost 320% more weight. So if you love to eat and don't want to count calories, fat, or carbs anymore, or try Fat Inferno. And with Fat Inferno, you'll melt away up to 7 pounds of ugly fat in the first week and one dress or pant size every 2 weeks thereafter, guaranteed. So if you love to eat, now you'll love to lose. Call now for your risk-free trial. Fat Inferno is safe, clinically proven, and guaranteed to work. Call toll-free 1-800-482-6158. That's 1-800-482-6158. 1-800-482-6158.
Doctors at Northwestern Memorial Hospital in Chicago say the condition of Indiana Governor Frank O'Bannon has improved slightly, but they caution it's too soon to say if he'll recover from the massive stroke he suffered there on Monday. O'Bannon remains in critical condition. Doctors say the bleeding on his brain has stopped and he's out of the drug-induced coma that he'd been in. Even though his vital signs are stronger, he's still not fully aware. Meanwhile, the Indiana Supreme Court has now formally transferred O'Bannon's powers to Lieutenant Governor Joe Kernan. Award-winning author Alice Walker has canceled an event at Yale University that was scheduled for tonight, refusing to cross the picket lines at the school. Walker, author of The Color Purple, was slated to speak at the opening of the Beinecke Library's exhibition's Intimate Circles, American Women in the Arts. Meanwhile, the two sides in the labor dispute returned to the bargaining table in the office of New Haven Mayor John DeStefano. The discussions were expected to be philosophical in nature, with neither side having their full negotiating team present. Thousands of unionized Yale service workers went on strike more than a week ago, seeking improved wages, pensions, and job security.
Whether you've got bald tires, a flat tire, old tires, or are just tired of looking at white walls, there's no better time to pick up a new set of Goodyear tires than during National Automotive Month at Sears Auto Center. Because Goodyear tires are all on sale. And get a free DieHard Weather Handler battery worth $59.99 when you buy four Goodyear tires. Just bring in your old battery, and we'll exchange it free. But only during National Automotive Month and only at Sears Auto Center. Sears, good life, great price. Sale and free battery offer end 8/23. Find us online at Sears.com or America Online, keyword Sears.
A weapons expert from the CIA who was caught up in the dispute over the White House's knowledge of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq will leave the spy agency next month. After 26 years at the CIA, Alan Foley has decided to retire after heading up a Weapons Intelligence, Nonproliferation, and Arms Control Center. Foley said his decision to step down was made entirely on his own and has nothing to do with the controversy that came up this summer over the language in President Bush's State of the Union message that included allegations that Iraq had sought nuclear materials in Africa. Foley says he is hoping to pursue new opportunities in the private sector. Stocks ended lower today after a previously unseen videotape showing Al-Qaeda terror network leader Osama bin Laden shook up investors on the eve of the second anniversary of 9/11. The Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 87 points to close at 94.20. The Nasdaq dropped 50 points to wind up at 18.24. The broader S&P 500 slid 12 points to close at 10.11. I'm Darren Copeland. This is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Your car coughing, sputtering, riding rough? Think your service center has one magic machine that checks everything? Oh no, one size doesn't fit all. When I come back, I'll give you the scope. The scoop.
Okay, so you want one good reason to get LoJack installed in your car. Well, unfortunately, I can't give you that. But I can give you three. LoJack has a 90% recovery success rate. LoJack has helped recover over 100,000 vehicles worldwide. And LoJack is the only stolen vehicle recovery system used by the police. So if you still want just one good reason to get LoJack, that last one should do quite nicely. To find a dealer near you, visit LoJack.com. And keep it close.
Just like in a doctor's office, different diagnostic tools are used for different symptoms in service centers. A scope performs an EKG on your car's electrical system and checks engine functions as it runs, just like a patient on a treadmill. A scanner, on the other hand, talks with car's onboard computers and sensors, like getting a patient history. But if your car has new noises, hard steering, bumpy ride, or vibrating brakes, you don't need a machine test. You need a doctor, a qualified, experienced technician. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network. Right now, Mike Malloy.
With special guest host Curtis Ellis.
Hey, gang, I'm here with you for the rest of the hour. We got one more hour to go here on the IE America Radio Network. My name, just like that lady said, my name is Curtis Ellis. And the phone number here is 800-825-5937. You can email me at fasttalkradio@yahoo.com. FASTTALK, Fast Talk Radio at yahoo.com. I am joined in this hour by Patty Casaza. Patty Casaza is not a household name, but she should be. Her courage, her perseverance, and Her sheer grit in the service of her country makes her an invaluable resource for anyone who cares about this country, cares about this democracy, and cares about the historical record. She is one of the four moms. These are four widows. They lost loved ones on September 11, 3 years ago, who have been fighting for an independent commission to investigate all of the events that led up to September 11th. It is an investigation which has been resisted by the Bush administration methodically, systematically, and repeatedly. The administration has dragged its feet, really did not welcome this investigation. But these four women have persisted. They've rallied congresspeople. They've rallied support in and out of the government and kept pushing and pushing and pushing. And now there is an independent commission which is supposed to be looking into what happened on September 11th, how it could happen, how the people that we have been paying dearly, spending billions of dollars to protect us, somehow missed the big ball. They didn't have their eye on the ball on September 11th. Patty, thank you very much for taking time. I know this is a trying week for you, and everybody wants to talk to you, and thank you for taking some time out of your evening tonight to join me.
You're welcome.
There's a terrific article in the New York Observer a few weeks ago, written by Gail Sheehy.
Right.
And I guess she sat down and or followed you around for a while. How did that article come about?
Well, one of the women, one of the four moms from New Jersey, Kristen Breitweiser, lived in the town of Middletown, which lost probably the greatest number of people in the towers outside of New York in a small concentrated area. And the name of the town was Middletown, and that struck a chord with Gail Sheehy. And Kristen, being one of the moms of Middletown, was interviewed by Gail Sheehy for about a year and a half following the attacks. And because, you know, I was closely aligned with her on a number of the issues that surrounded the families, I too got interviewed in the process.
Mm-hmm. Now, I was down at a press conference that you were at today. The Family Steering Committee of the 9/11 families had a press conference about a number of issues. Now, am I accurate or was I off base here? Do you feel that this the administration, the government, even maybe beyond the Bush administration, the U.S. government in general, are you satisfied that they have been doing everything they can to get information out to the public so that we can be informed about what actually happened leading up to September 11th?
No. Clearly, in the Clinton administration, there were incidents leading up to 9/11 involving al-Qaeda. We had the bombing of the Cole, which was a ship involving our military, and there was basically no military or otherwise reaction by our government in that administration to that attack. And to indicate that they were fully aware of the threat going forward, mm-hmm. when the Clinton administration was on its way out, Sandy Berger, the former national security advisor of that administration, sat down with Condoleezza Rice's counterpart in the Bush administration and had transition meetings to discuss and, I guess, try to impose upon Condoleezza Rice how serious the threat of al-Qaeda was against this nation, stating to her to the effect that the Bush administration, the whole focus of the Bush administration would be centered around the threat of al-Qaeda. And to my way of thinking, the Clinton administration certainly did not do their job if they were aware of this threat. And then, as I said in the meeting earlier today, Sandy Berger handed the baton over to Condoleezza Rice, who should have then indicated to President Bush that this threat was real and imminent. I believe the Clinton administration, according to Sandy Berger, actually had a plan on how to fight al-Qaeda, their recommendations. And to my knowledge, that information was basically ignored. And to my way of thinking...
By the Bush administration.
By the Bush administration. And to my way of thinking, Condoleezza Rice, the Bush administration, did not have the right to disregard that information because it centered on the security of all Americans. And that is, by and large, their first priority is the security of Americans. So if, it's politics as usual and the new Republican administration wants to disregard what the former Democratic administration had to say, they don't have the right. You have to put your egos aside. You have the responsibility to protect Americans, not serve your own agendas first.
Yeah.
And that's...
You know, you had some very specific questions that were raised at the press conference that you hope this independent commission will address. Now, I mean, you folks are very specific. You want to know, what about the FAA? What about NORAD? What about the scrambling of jets no scrambling of jets? Now, I understand you have put together a timeline. You have done some pretty thorough investigation on your own, you and Kristen and the other two women.
Yes. We've been basically piecing together information from various news networks from around the world since, I would say, November of 2001. All along, the story that the administration was telling us, it didn't seem to fit with regard to the scrambling of the jets, for instance, by the military. In normal, everyday flight, if a transponder, which is like an electronics message to the control tower of where a plane is in its flight,
right.
If that transponder is shut off, the control tower tries to make contact and regain contact. The contact, find out if it's an electrical problem or whatnot. And then if a plane goes off course, again, the same procedures are put into place. And if a plane does not respond whatsoever to the contact, and the plane is off course, the transponder is shut off, that is an air crash waiting to happen. So it's an emergency that air traffic controllers deal with on a regular basis. And the FAA is supposed to notify NORAD. NORAD sends up jet fighters. In the case of Payne Stewart, who...
The golfer with a private jet.
Yes, apparently he had a heart attack and went off course. In that instance and many others, jets were scrambled within 6 minutes to perform a graduated response. And the graduated response is that they go beside the jet, they rock wings to indicate, look, you're off course.
Right.
Respond to us. Tell us what the problem is, if there's a problem. And if they don't respond, the response is that the plane, the pilots could eventually shoot that plane down if it appeared that it was going to perhaps interfere with airspace and other planes. And that would be the worst. Of course, the worst-case scenario. But in the case of the trade centers, for example, the first plane was known to be hijacked. I mean, that there were...
They knew something was wrong.
Yes, they knew it was... There were airline people above on the plane. Stewardess is making contact with the ground, telling mm-hmm. them that they were hijacked. It was confirmed hijacked then between 8:13 and 8:20. No planes were scrambled until 9:38 when the Pentagon got hit. Now, that's right. The third plane that went into a building at that point, an hour and a half.
Now, you brought some of this up before the 9/11 Commission in one of their few public hearings. I don't mean you personally. Maybe you did. I didn't get to watch all of that on TV, but I saw that some of the commission members were giving the Air Force people a pretty good grilling on these subjects.
Right.
Am I correct, or did they not give them a good grilling?
They had Jane Garvey, who was the former head of the FAA, pretty much on the hot seat. But... you know, she was allowed to get off the hot seat by saying, you know, she didn't have the exact timeline in front of her. You know, there was a series of excuses.
Yeah, it's amazing. Here they are coming before the commission, and
exactly.
They didn't
they're
even
not
think
prepared.
To bring... They're not prepared. They didn't
right.
think to bring the timeline. Oh, they might not ask me about this. I don't think they're going to ask me about that, so I'm
exactly.
not going to bother to look into it.
I just can't... I mean, from a personal standpoint, I just can't believe... people, agencies who were directly responsible for the deaths of 3,000 people and could have been potentially more. I mean, the trade centers themselves on an average day held 50,000 people.
Yeah.
How
I'm sorry, we're coming up on a little break here.
Okay.
We're going to be right back. Thank you for understanding. We do have commercials to play here on the IE America Radio Network. Speaking with Patty Casaza. One of the families pushing for an independent commission, a truly independent investigation of 9/11. Phone number here is 800-825-5937.
Hey, Mom, here's some good news. Tax rebate checks are here just in time for back-to-school shopping. And Sears will cash your tax rebate check free of charge with any purchase. Here's some more good news. Right now, during the Sears Great 3-Day Sale, save 50% on great back-to-school items throughout the store. Plus, all jeans are on sale. Brands like Levi's, Lee, Canyon River Blues, LEI, Bongo, and Mud. So hurry in now through Saturday. You don't want to miss the Great 3-Day Sale. 3-Day Sale ends August 16th. All jeans on sale through August 30th. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Sears. Good life. Great price.
Now, everything you need for successful estate planning comes in one package. The new Master Estate Kit is a collection of legal power that would cost you $500 or more if prepared by a lawyer. Here's what you'll get. First, a legal will kit, one praised by nearly 500,000 buyers. Second, a living will kit that assures your wishes will be followed in case of an irreversible injury or illness. And third, a power of attorney kit that includes all the required forms. Order today and we'll include the new Family Legal Guide. It answers all your questions about small claims court, landlord agreements, personal bankruptcy, and much more. An $80 value, the complete Master Estate Kit costs only $39.95. For immediate delivery of the Master Estate Kit and your free Family Legal Guide, call 1-800-221-0393. Pay only $39.95 plus shipping. Every kit carries an unlimited money-back guarantee. Call 1-800-221-0393 now. That's 1-800-221-0393.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places, a ray of hope in these dark days, and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Show. Jody in Arlington Heights, she said, first, yesterday's show was the first time I was seriously concerned for your health. I hope you've recovered. You know, I'm fine. I get crazy. My blood pressure skyrockets. I understand that. I have a pretty good doctor who recently put me on blood pressure medicine, and it seems to be working. There have been times when I've been talk radio when I thought I was going to burst an artery, but that would make for good radio, wouldn't it?
Hey, did you hear Malloy program the other night? Some bitch died right on the air. There was this popping sound. Woo, man, cool. I bet Rush couldn't do that.
Sorry, didn't mean to frighten you. You're a bit late for that.
Hate when he does that.
Mike Molloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Do you dig your dog, but your dog digs your rose bushes?
Does Hole in the Head have your Oscar?
Is your cat doing a Tarzan swing from your drapes?
Is your python pooped?
Do you hate your folks because they spent your college tuition on a European vacation?
Jamie, what does that have to do with animal?
I don't know. I kind of ran out of stuff.
Now, come on, this is a commercial for a major radio network. We should do better.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Mike Molloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, pathetic. Too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You
why,
hate
why not
me?
Why put something on that says he's a great goof, liberal?
Goof?
Yeah, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Molloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
Molloy Show with special guest host Curtis Ellis.
And you're listening to me, Curtis Ellis, sitting in for Mike. Mike, we'll be back Monday. Don't panic. I'll be here tomorrow night as well. With me tonight, who's that singing? What's going on here, baby? I don't understand. Anyway, the phone number here is 800-825-5937. Patty Casaza is nice enough to join me this evening for the next half hour or so. Patty is one of the so-called four moms from New Jersey who's been pushing for the September 11th Commission, an independent investigation onto the failures of intelligence and basically the failures of our government to protect us. And it's been an uphill battle. It's been an uphill battle. This is a government that talks about personal responsibility and people taking responsibility for their actions. And you know, I guess if you're out of work, you shouldn't expect any unemployment insurance because you got to take personal responsibility for your welfare. But if you're asleep at the switch and 3,000 people are murdered, you just get a promotion or a medal or something from this government. I don't quite understand how it works. You have any better idea how this thing works here, Patty?
I certainly feel that we should have better accountability from our leaders, and clearly there is no expectation from this administration providing that accountability. I've watched our leaders stand before us and lie repeatedly. I mean, not only in 9/11 issues, but then we had the war in Iraq. We went over there on the basis of erroneous information.
Yeah.
How much more are we supposed to tolerate?
And then we're told the air that we're breathing, if you're living in lower Manhattan, that the air has been fine all along. And then we find out, oops.
Yeah,
no.
Exactly. I was speaking to one of the victims who, you know, had an inhalation injury down there. And he said, you know, what do you think I should do? And I said, write to Christy Todd Whitman. She's, the director of the EPA. And ask her this question. Why wasn't Ground Zero declared a Superfund site on September 11th? And we've come to find out that, you know, the EPA wasn't monitoring the air properly because I believe they knew it was that toxic. You know, so they can say the air was clean as far as they knew because they didn't put the proper equipment down there to monitor it.
Yeah.
And apparently there was also pressure from the White House to not let people know how bad it was down there.
That's right. Now, one of the questions you had was very basic. President Bush was sitting in a classroom reading to children for 25 minutes after he knew there was an attack underway in New York.
Well, even before President Bush went into the classroom, apparently he was told that the first tower had been hit. It was his decision to go ahead with this basically photo op session to listen to second graders read. It was a reading initiative program. So not only did he know the first building had been hit, when Andrew Card whispered in his ear on television, that in that infamous shot that we've seen over and over again, Andrew Card was letting him know that the second tower had been hit, and the statement was, "We are under attack." Now, The president continued to sit there after that point in time. The second tower had been hit, and as I said before, those buildings held potentially 50,000 people, continued to sit while our loved ones burned alive. He sat there for an additional 25 minutes listening to second graders read a story about goats. Now, this was ostensibly to protect these children from the horror that was going on and not to panic them. That's an unrealistic story because in addition to the buildings getting hit, students' life was also in danger at that point, potentially.
Yeah.
And his sitting there in a well-publicized photo op session, he also put the children in that
in danger. Yeah.
In danger.
Patty Casaza, thank you very much. We're going to be with you for another segment here. We got another little break coming up, a little news break. So keep tuned in.
Hey, Mom, here's some good news. Tax rebate checks are here just in time for back-to-school shopping. And Sears will cash your tax rebate check free of charge with any purchase. Here's some more good news. Right now, during the Sears Great 3-Day Sale, save 50% on great back-to-school items throughout the store. Plus, all jeans are on sale. Brands like Levi's, Lee, Canyon River Blues, LEI, Bongo, and Mud. So hurry in now through Saturday. You don't want to miss the Great 3-Day Sale. 3-Day Sale ends August 16th. All jeans on sale through August 30th. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Sears. Good life. Great price.
You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show, 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, Monday through Friday on IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Hamilton.
And I'm Laura Miller.
The promise of the American dream turned into a nightmare for immigrant workers employed by the John Pickle Company of Tulsa. That's what 52 Indian immigrants argued as their case against the Oklahoma manufacturer opened this week in a federal court. The welders, fitters, and electricians say they were recruited to come to the U.S. through promises of high wages and furnished apartments. Instead, the workers charged they were paid only $2 to $3 an hour and forced to live in a factory dormitory. The John Pickle Company faces charges of human trafficking, violations of the Fair Labor Standards Act, and a discrimination charge from the Equal Employment Opportunities Commission. The company argues the immigrants were trainees and not employees and therefore not entitled to minimum wage.
It's official. Woefully understaffed nursing homes and hospitals were directly related to the deaths of thousands of elderly French citizens during an August heat wave. A new government report says that 11,000 people died as a direct result of the heat, many of them in nursing homes. But numbers kept by doctors put the death toll closer to 15,000. The government says the understaffing problem at health facilities was made worse by the fact that many people were on their yearly vacation, typically taken in August in France.
California businesses could soon be required to purchase health insurance for their employees. A bill introduced by San Francisco Senator John Burton would require businesses that employ 20 or more workers to either purchase health insurance for them or to contribute funds to a state-run pool that would in turn provide health coverage. Companies with 200 or more employees would also be required to cover the families of workers. Already, the legislation faces fierce resistance from business groups and the California Chamber of Commerce, which argues the bill would have a $4 billion price tag and would drive business from the state.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Animal Talk, your animalological super information highway about pets. Every Saturday and Sunday, we take your calls, help you with your pets, give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like, from Eight Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel.
Animal Talk, Saturday noon to 2, Sunday 7 to 9 p.m. on the IE America Radio Network.
Another
audio clip from the production meeting. Doug Steffen.
What production meeting?
The drive. You know how many radio stations we're on? We must be doing something right, guys.
Imagine if we really tried.
Doug. Yeah, yeah.
If we don't care, and it shows.
On the IE America Radio Network.
We're back. It's the Mike Malloy Show with special guest host Curtis Ellis.
And I'm here with you at 800-825-5937, or if you care to email your comments or questions, the email address here is fasttalkradio@yahoo.com. fasttalkradio@yahoo.com. My name's Curtis Ellis, and I'm here with Patty Casaza. Patty Casaza is one of the four moms. She lost her husband on September 11th. He worked at Cantor Fitzgerald in the World Trade Center, and she has been pushing with the three other moms to get an independent commission, an independent investigation. She believes in transparency. She wants there to be an open historical record as to what happened. How did we get in this situation we're in? A lot of people, this is me talking now, not Patty. A lot of people are trying to make political hay and take political advantage of what actually happened on, or the events of September 11th, but they don't seem to be in a big rush to let us know exactly what happened and how we got there. Before we took that little break, you were talking about how the president was sat there for 25 minutes reading goat stories to kids, or listening to kids read goat stories to him, when everybody knew what was happening in New York.
Exactly. And I myself, my husband had called me after his tower had been hit. He still had a landline that was operating, and you know, he was telling me that they were trapped, that the stairwells were gone, the elevators were gone, thick black smoke was billowing through the floor, and that the rooftop doors were locked. And he said to me, I don't think we're going to make it. And he broke down sobbing and was in total anguish. And I couldn't believe, when the whole world was watching this unfold, and my president knew this going into that classroom, sat there in front of second graders, continuing to listen to them read while my husband burned alive, and that of thousands of others, thousands of other innocent people. If that didn't constitute a national emergency worthy of the president standing up and taking action, or, in my mind, acting presidential and doing everything in his power to rescue those that were, burning alive. I just couldn't believe it. I was saying, please, just get up. Get my husband out of there. Get up
out of
that chair. Am I wrong to think that we should be able to have expectations? I had expectations, apparently I was wrong to have expected those things of my leaders.
No, you weren't wrong. You weren't wrong. Somebody was wrong in that picture, but it wasn't you, Patty. It's unfathomable to me as well how someone could do that. There's so much that could have been done, so much that needed to be done, and leadership is about stepping forward and taking command, but that's not what we saw that day in some quarters. Then there were questions about trying to find out what went wrong, and do you see, have you encountered this administration being very forthcoming with information?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, I mean, there was a big stonewalling just to get an investigation off the ground. I have heard that Vice President Dick Cheney called Tom Daschle, He was then the leader of the Senate majority, and said, you know, we really don't want an investigation into 9/11 at this time. We feel that it would interfere on the war in terrorism. Now, in the war on terrorism, don't you have to know what happened in order to bring the proper resources to bear to fight that war?
There's a concept.
Exactly. And then going further, there was a joint inquiry that was set up, and the joint inquiry was a bipartisan, bicameral investigation of only the intelligence failures. And even there, the joint inquiry was unable to get any records from the National Security Council. That's a whole agency, whole nexus of the intelligence agencies. So even the joint inquiry, as good a job that they did with what they received, did not have all the information needed to do their job to the best of their ability. They did the best they could with what they received. And then going forward with that, the joint inquiry was supposed to be a springboard for the independent commission, whose mandate it was to look into all of the other failures and any intelligence failures that the joint inquiry was unable to get to in the time that they had allotted. And the White House, in effect, classified the joint inquiry report, the very report that the commission was supposed to use as a springboard. Even one of the commission members, former Congressman Tim Romer, was on the Senate Intelligence Committee that produced the joint inquiry report. He was not permitted to review its contents until it was declassified. And that stonewalling took about 7 months of the commission's
time. This is unbelievable. The very report was classified, and the next commission was not allowed to read the previous commission's report. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and in its mandate, which is a law, I mean, we got this commission passed through the House, the Senate, and the White House. It was written in law that the independent commission was supposed to use that joint inquiry report as a springboard. In other words, they didn't want duplication of efforts. And that was the reason why one of the reasons why we were told, anyway, that the independent commission had to wait as long as it did to get started, because the joint inquiry had to be done with their report first before an independent commission could begin their work.
Now, this independent
they held on to that information.
Yeah, now this independent commission has a time limit on it as well,
yes.
Doesn't it?
Yes. It started in December of 2002, and it will expire on May of 2004.
May of 2004.
So we're basically halfway through. It's time to investigate. None of the public hearings that we've had thus far have had really any hard-hitting interrogations, except for the FAA, and even those that were completed in those areas, none of what came out of those hearings was very definitive.
No. Now, there's some concerns that you have, and I learned at the press conference today, which I have too now. None of the witnesses that appear before this commission are even sworn in, so they can basically lie. They're not under oath. They can say anything they want.
Well, I mean, that is true, and we've...
I know we're not supposed to believe that our government would ever lie to us or that a government official would ever shade the truth to try to make themselves look better, but
I'll say that.
You didn't.
Right, exactly. Right. Being sworn in, we were told, prevents people from, I guess, revealing as much as they normally would. When we're working with an administration that, you know, shrouds itself in secrecy every step of the way, I think you have to swear in victims, and you have to, you know, have the threat of perjury to prod those people to come to the hearings fully informed and aware that they're they are under oath.
That's right, and they will be held accountable. There will be some accountability.
Accountability is all we're asking for.
And the other thing, which is amazing, but not so amazing in light of this administration, but it's just shocking, is that the witnesses, some of the government officials that are called to testify, have minders. They have people watching them.
Exactly.
Explain how that works.
Well, basically, if a CIA agent is testifying, you know, about what they knew beforehand, what investigations were going on with the terrorists prior to 9/11, they have minders in on those interviews to make sure that they are not compromising national security and or cases like the Massawi case.
Mm-hmm.
Massawi's the supposed 20th hijacker. Basically, even with that case, the Massawi case, I feel that our government is holding a lot of information hostage because they don't answer questions on the basis that it would compromise that trial. Now, you know, how many people do we have in Guantanamo Bay?
Right.
To my way of thinking, you put him over there, you get the information that you can from him. Now, he may or may not be the 20th hijacker. He possibly could have been even a hijacker of another plane, a fifth plane. And now, if that's the case, he could have had other cohorts that were supposed to also hijack that plane with him. We've been told over and over again there are cells within the United States. I say get what you can from him and go after any of his other cohorts. Stop hijacking our national security with this case. And that's, in effect, what I believe they're doing with it. In this case, Massawi is supposed to be defending himself. He's supposed to have the right to interview other terrorists who might be able to substantiate the fact that he was not involved in the terrorist attacks. He does not, he admits that he was an Al-Qaeda member and he fully followed Osama bin Laden. He was a full believer in what he was doing and the jihad against America. I mean, he's an admitted terrorist. But the idea that he's going to be able to interview other terrorists is just absurd. Our government will never allow that to happen. And basically, they're just using this trial to last moment in time, I believe. And then they'll declare him an enemy combatant.
Well, couldn't there be another...
Done. Go ahead.
Yeah, there could be another angle to this, too, that they're using... The government is using this case, this legal case,
right,
this court case of Massawi, as an excuse not to release information to the 9/11 commission.
Exactly.
And to other investigators, we can't release that because it could prejudice this court case.
Right. Or it could be, you know, they stonewall this case and Massawi actually does have information, or these other terrorists do have information that we could use, and they're just going to drag it out until that point in time where Massawi perhaps his rights are protected. And then they'll declare him an enemy combatant when they can't stonewall it any further.
I get the feeling, I don't know if you do, that there is a bit of, well, let's run the clock out on the 9/11 commission. We know it's going to go out of existence in May, so the longer we drag things out and the longer we wait and the more we drag our feet, the better off we are if we don't want to get this information out there.
Exactly. And the further away from you get from 9/11, the less public interest you have. In addition to that, I mean, the commission is supposed to wrap up in May, and we could, in effect, lobby for more time if we find that the commissioners are unable to, you know, or feel that they're unable to complete their work.
Now, how can people lobby? This, to me, is so outrageous, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners out there too. Who can we call? Who do we write? Is our congressman? Is it Richard Benveniste on the commission? Who is it? How did you go about it?
for the commission to get more time, it would have to be a legislative decision. So they would have to contact their congressmen and their senators, and it would have to go before a vote before the House and the Senate, and of course then approved by the White House for that to be passed. Now, some things passed rather quickly. The commission was, believe it or not, initially given $3 million to work with. Now, this is the largest investigation in the course of American history, and it was given $3 million to start with.
Yeah, how much did they spend to investigate Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky?
I'm thinking somewhere in the $80 million range.
Yeah.
But what had happened, and I think really the reason that we were able to get more money for the commission, was that the shuttle had just exploded, and that there were, believe it or not, commissions set up within 24 hours of the shuttle. And the shuttle commission received $50 million. Now, no way do I say, you know, that wasn't deserved.
Mm-hmm.
But seven people died in the shuttle, and 3,000 people died on 9/11.
Right. And what are the implications of 9/11 versus the shuttle?
The implications are national safety. You know, and I'm all for space exploration. I'm not saying that that is not an important piece of our Americana, but certainly the lives of 3,000 people also warrant a full investigation of the highest quality, and could demand, you know, the resources required for that.
Yeah, it's unfathomable how the American people are just standing by and not demanding a thorough accounting of what happened.
Well, I don't know if you recall, but initially anybody that went counter to what this administration was saying in the early days of 9/11 was deemed unpatriotic.
That's right.
You know, even as family members, we were told, you know, don't you feel that going over into Afghanistan, putting our military at risk, is retribution enough for you, family members?
Oh, isn't that enough? That's right. Can you hold on one moment? We have one quick segment. We're going to be back for a few minutes more with Patty Casaza here on the IE America Radio Network. My name's Curtis Ellis.
Hey, Mom, here's some good news. Tax rebate checks are here just in time for back-to-school shopping. And Sears will cash your tax rebate check free of charge with any purchase. Here's some more good news. Right now, during the Sears Great 3-Day Sale, save 50% on great back-to-school items throughout the store. Plus, all jeans are on sale. Brands like Levi's, Lee, Canyon River Blues, LEI, Bongo, and Mud. So hurry in now through Saturday. You don't want to miss the Great 3-Day Sale. 3-day sale ends August 16th. All jeans on sale through August 30th. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Sears. Good life. Great price.
Wouldn't it be great if you could get everything you need for successful estate planning in one package? Well, now you can. The new Master Estate Kit offers a collection of legal power that would cost you $500 or more if prepared by a lawyer. Here's what you get. First, a legal will kit, one praised by nearly 500,000 buyers. Second, a living will kit that assures your wishes will be followed in case of an irreversible injury or illness. And third, a power of attorney kit that includes all the required forms. Order today and we'll include the new Family Legal Guide. It answers all your questions about small claims court, landlord agreements, personal bankruptcy, and much more. An $80 value, the complete Master Estate Kit costs only $39.95. For immediate delivery of the Master Estate Kit and your free Family Legal Guide, call 1-800-221-0393. Pay only $39.95 plus shipping. Every kit carries an unlimited money-back guarantee. Call 1-800-221-0393 now. That's 1-800-221-0393.
You're strapped in to 700 horses of pure power.
Gentlemen, start your engine.
But you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and you've got 500 laps to go.
I should have used Preparation H.
Cool it fast with Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact for fast relief.
Lap number 25.
Oh, man, I should have used Preparation H.
Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact. Uses directed.
Thieves in High Places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
This Monday, September 15th, 2003, Tom Hartman and Mike Malloy are giving away two of the best books you will ever read. Hello?
Thank you!
No, I said Monday, not now.
That's right. Starting Monday, September 15th, you will have the opportunity to win either Tom Hartman's Unequal Protection or a signed copy of Jim Hightower's Thieves in High Places. Make sure to listen to Tom Hartman from noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and Mike Malloy from 9 p.m. till midnight for details. Hello? No, not now. Monday. Again, you can win either a copy of Tom Hartman's Unequal Protection or a signed copy of Jim Hightower's Thieves in High Places on the only progressive talk radio network there is, i.e. America Radio Network.
It is miraculous.
I'm not going to answer that.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com. And join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
We're back. It's the Mike Malloy Show with special guest host Curtis Ellis.
And with my special guest, Patty Casaza. She's been pushing for a truly independent and thorough accounting of what led up to September 11th. She and three other women, widows, moms, citizens, true citizens of America, have been pushing for this independent commission. We were saying before the break, Patty, you were saying about how, before, immediately following September 11th, anybody who dared to question the administration was deemed unpatriotic. And I guess people told you that, well, you should be happy that we're bombing Afghanistan. That's enough. And you said something today at the press conference which really struck me about having faith in our government.
Right. I said, I have faith in God. I want to be able to trust my government. And the only way I can trust my government is to have them fully accountable to me, to us as Americans. We are, in fact, the employer of these people in office. They are accountable to us. We must demand accountability from them. They should not be able to get away with not answering our questions, our concerns, making us feel safe in this nation again. We need our faith restored, our trust restored, in order to go forward and believe in our government again. That was completely shattered for me and many others on 9/11, and I have yet to see that restored.
Yes. I got the feeling after September 11th, the country went through this traumatic, or a lot of the people in this country, went through this almost pathological reaction that I've read about with battered children. Abused children start to believe that they need to be protected by their parents, the very people that are abusing them. They can't accept the fact that their parents are wrong or doing something wrong, and they need to be, because children need to be protected. They cannot exist on their own. So they block out the fact that their parents have been doing something wrong. And likewise, we felt so vulnerable after September 11th that, oh, please protect us. We're not going to ask you to be accountable. We're not going to ask you what you did wrong and what really happened. We're just going to block that out and have blind faith that you will make us all safe. But that's not the way a healthy adult person is supposed to behave.
No, exactly. I mean, my son mimicked almost those exact words to me after I had to tell him that I didn't think that my husband, his father, was coming home alive.
Oh, my gosh.
He indicated to me, he said, Mom, who will stay and protect us?
Thank you very much. Patty, on that note, I'm afraid we are clean out of time. Patty Casaza, thank you very much. I'll be back tomorrow night. My name's Curtis Ellis.
See the look on Nancy's face.
What's she doing?
I asked her if she wanted a boogie, and she just gave me this condescending sneer.
Is it the condescending, I don't boogie?
How would I keep up with her?
Right.
Boogieing.
Nancy can boogie. Yeah. Doug, I've never seen you dance.
Kind of looks like a frog in a blender.
I could dance with you till the cows come home. On second thought, I'd rather dance with the cows than you come home.
On the IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is